is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Yeah, it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak Chopra.
Thank you.
Yes, this is Ori.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, Love and Healing Solutions with Beth and Gil. Gil and Beth show people how spiritual truth can help you heal from emotional pain resulting in personal transformation. Gil is a highly skilled pastor who raised up two megachurches in Colorado, and Beth is known around the world as a top-flight psychologist, trauma expert, and gifted healer. Together, they inform and inspire people to recycle and repurpose their lives through the currency of a healed life from breakups and divorce, addiction, failure, loss, and change. Tune in.
Okay, switchboard's a bit glitchy. Let's see if we've got Beth and Gil. For the love of God, are you there?
We're here.
Yeah.
We're here.
Yeah, if anything goes really wrong, it's because of the switchboard. So
if that's right.
We mess up, I say something really stupid, which tends to happen a lot. It's just
switchboard.
Switchboard. I had a surprise for you guys, and I was all excited. We changed your intro to a British guy, and it wouldn't play. So.
So, we like the guy who was there.
Yeah, the South African. James Earl Jones, whoever you want.
Well, next time it'll be a British guy, God willing. All right. Anyway, you're back.
Does he have a
Yay.
Bass voice? Hey.
We're glad to be here. We're glad to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for being good to us during Healing Solutions Global Staff Training. We're finished with that. So we're, as much as we love all those folks.
Yeah. Good to be here.
It's good to be here.
Well, why don't we get you to sort of bring us up to speed where we're at in the series that you're doing and what's up for today?
Sure. Yeah. So the series we've been doing is Personality Traits Gone Wild. And I love that title. And today we're actually going to talk about the cynic.
Yeah, it's it's the person that is basically sees life as one big obstacle, problem, not to be trusted. If you get on Twitter,
there you go.
That's
really,
if you get on Twitter, you'll get that definition in like 5 seconds, because it is the home. It's the social media home of cynics. You know. Adele has a song, it's called Set Fire to the Rain. So if your listeners know this song, Adele, it's basically resonates, I think, with human beings who dared to dream of love, dared to dream of hope, or they've idealized a life, going really, really well, right? Like they have this hope in them for the best. And then life hits an unsuspecting wave and they get swept out to sea. And so Adele is really good at communicating these things, and the lyrics to the song go like this. She goes, I let it fall, my heart, and as it fell, you rose to claim it. So she is Juliet, and her Romeo has shown up, and he's coming in on the white horse, and so she's like, it was dark and I was over until you kissed my lips and
you
saved
me.
Which right there is a problem. But she is, man, she's saved. She is kissing this guy. It is movie worthy, right? Her hands, they were strong, but her knees were far too weak. I mean, to stand in your arms, this whole thing. She's in, right? 100%. And then she says, and this is where it turns, right? But there's a side to you, my knight in shining armor, you know, that I never knew. All the things you'd say were never true. And the games you'd play, you would always win. So I set fire to the rain, right? I set fire to the rain. And that, I think, the best way, I think Adele and the world would be able to say it is, my heart was smitten. I saw this beautiful life in front of me, and then it just got smashed against the waves of, you know, pain and hurt. So she just says, she torches the guy. If you read the whole song through, she sets fire to the rain of her tears and obliterates his little soul. And have you ever had someone really let you down? I mean, this is the number one song for a reason. The entire world had this song at number one for a while because everyone can relate to that.
Yeah.
Everyone. So cynicism isn't just a personality trait gone wild. It's a developed over time trap that can ruin your life. It actually doesn't just ruin your life. This is interesting writing for me because in my family, every one of us has a choice to make in my family. And that is I'm either going to give in to abuse and I'm just going to I'm gonna protect my heart. I love this. Beth says, so isn't cynicism gone wild just –
self-protection.
Absolute, over-the-top self-protection. I will, and so it goes like this, I will never love again. I will never start another business. I will never get another business partner.
Well, they're vows that we make
yes.
to ourselves, about ourselves, others, God. It's a vow. Yep, I will never. It's an I will never vow. I will never suffer again. I will never show you my heart again. I will never have another relationship. I will never trust anybody. I will never work for a man again. I mean, you fill in the blank. I mean, really, you just fill in the blank for people. It is. It's a vow of I will never.
Yeah. I think right now is probably I've never seen more sin.
I agree.
Toxic yeah. cynicism
yeah.
in my life up to this point.
Yeah, I agree. Especially last few years.
Yeah. Like I can't, if I say the wrong words.
You're canceled.
You're canceled. Like,
yeah.
It's like, nope. You know.
Well, and the person that canceled you is a cynic too. Yeah, really.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I think it's all over the map. I mean, it happens when lovers and artists and idealists and optimists and positive thinkers, you know, bump into the real world of hate and pain and betrayal and broken agreements and financial woes with health problems like cancer and death of loved ones. It is just, you are shaking your fist at the world. And the thing is, you used to be such a beautiful soul. That's the, you know.
Yeah, I think people that become really cynical are originally optimists and oftentimes very sensitive ones.
Yeah, I have a feeling, Nicole, that your listeners, they don't come to your site because they're done. They come to your site because they're super sensitive and intuitive, and they want everything that life would have to offer them at very, very deep levels. But things have happened, and they don't know how to deal with them and losing themselves. And so I would even say this, that a cynic is the more optimistic you are, the more idealistic you are, the more love you have in your heart, and the more you want to give yourself away to the world, the more you want to help, you know, fix things, all that.
Mm-hmm.
When you get hurt, burned, the cynicism goes as deep as it was, optimism was high. That's the thing for me. The more you the more you have this beautiful soul, this artistic, idealistic, I want the world to work in a certain way, and I'm willing to help it even. Like, I'm willing to jump on board with Mother Teresa here, right? Like, I'm willing to go to Calcutta. I'm willing to go, and then all of a sudden, you know, something comes in and crushes your heart and your soul, and then you go, never again. That's it. Out. That's a bunch of people. How many times have I heard people say to me, well, I'm never going to church again, you know, or with the government, I'm never voting again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never putting myself out there. And so that's the danger. So I was writing this, I was thinking, man, I have to be careful. You know, anyone with this tender soul has to be careful.
Well, one of the things that I think happens, I can see this picture of like, you get, it's chipped away, you know? So you're this optimist, you're sensitive, you want the best, and it gets chipped away over time until one day you wake up and you're a cynic. Seriously. And one of the things that I test for my clients with health issues or whatever they're coming to me with is that what's the straw that broke the camel's back for you? Because there is an event, but it's the straw that broke the camel's back. A lot of things have led up to it. But what's the straw that broke the camel's back? And when you can find that for somebody, you can change this.
Yeah.
I mean, you worked really hard on this in your own life, Gil. You know, and I have too. I have too. But it's looking at, okay, what's the straw that broke the camel's back where I turned and became a cynic out of self-protection.
Mm-hmm. Would you even say...
And insecurity.
Right on. I mean, would you even say this? I think when it comes to cynicism, people that are being chipped away, mm-hmm. I think they're looking for that final domino. I think they actually, at times, I know when they come to me as a pastor, they'll say, well, let me tell you the story of these other pastors I've had in my life, these other spiritual leaders I've had in my life, these priests, whoever it would be, you know, mm-hmm. these shamans, whatever. And they'll share these really wicked stories, like, you know, this person, you know, this guy did, and then they'll say, you're my last bet. And my first thought is always, well, I think I know where this is going, because I'm not perfect. And then when I blow it, which I will inevitably blow it with a cynic, when all I have to do is get up on the wrong side of the bed, all I have to do is tie my shoes in the morning, I know I'm going to get it. And they'll say to me, once I do something they do not like, they'll say these words, right? You're just like everyone else.
Yeah, I heard that yesterday. I heard that yesterday from a client.
What happened?
Well, first of all, it hurt. I've been out of the office training people, you know, training students and practitioners, so I haven't been as available. You're just like everybody else. You just left without saying anything. Well, I mean, if you email me, you get a response that says, you know, this is a training. These are the dates, but, you know, that wasn't enough. So you're right. There's this hurt part of the person. I mean, bless every one of them, honestly.
Yeah.
But there's this hurt part of that person that wants to say, like you just said, Gil, that wants to say you're just like everybody else that hurt me. And they will go out to prove that you're like everybody else that has hurt them.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. They already have a – I think you have a confirmation bias already going on.
Yep. That's a good term.
They want it confirmed, okay?
Yep.
And then they come to you and they go, well –
yep.
You're the person that's going to confirm it.
Hope.
Yeah. But when they say, yep, you know, it's almost as veiled, like, you can be my hero or you can be my final villain.
Yep.
And typically I go, well, let's just get the villain room ready. There's no way. I already know. Like, I just want to, I mean, Nicole, you probably get this. I mean, gosh, you have, you know, hundreds of thousands of listeners, you know, I can see them going, man, Cole, like this, your news for the soul, this is it. I found you. Woo. And then it's like, hey, you know, hero or villain. All right, Nicole, you better step it up. Don't make mistakes. That switchboard better work next time. You know, this is, you know, it's not awful yet, but it's on its way to awful. You know, this is, I know where this road ends. And seriously, I just want to say to those folks all the time, like, can I just cut this short for you? Like, you don't need to even take it. I just know I'm going to be a villain. Mm-hmm. So let me disappoint you now.
Yeah, I know. I get it. Yeah. And then, you know, then there's me or the healer part of me.
You're awesome.
I can see. I can see where that comes from. Like this person that said that to me. I know where that comes from. It comes from massive pain.
Oh, yeah, pain.
And I call it the original wound. And that original wound is not healed.
Nope. So you said
something. And it's bleeding out all over the place.
Well, you said something I think is really important. You didn't answer it, but you said it, which is right on. You said, if you can go back and find the original wound. Well, how do you do that?
Well, you find the original wound, and then you also find the straw that broke the camel's back in their life today, adult life.
So how do they do that?
Oh, I do it through self-testing and teaching energy testing and teaching muscle testing to build your intuition.
Okay.
And that's what I work with people on.
Yep.
Because, you know, people, and a lot of people know themselves quite well, but there are usually wrinkles that they haven't caught, that they're not sure of, where did this come from for me? Where did I start this belief system? You know, what happened? And they know some of it, and they feel like they can't trust people, and they know why. But a lot of times there's a nugget in there that the subconscious has not brought up yet that makes a big difference.
Well, I don't want to simplify this too much because the things you're talking about there are a little bit at deeper levels. But number one, and you'll ask this, and I hear this a lot from you, and I do it now too a lot, is Beth asked this question to these two known cynics, right? Like, I'm here, you're my last best bet. And Beth will always ask, do you want to get well? I mean, Jesus would ask that all the time to people.
Yeah.
Are you sure? You know? He had people come up to him that had been to the back in those days in Israel, they had those pools of healing where you'd go to them, and they were known as that. You know, these pools of healing, and they would lay in these pools, and they would still remain quadriplegics. They would still remain in deep pain emotionally and physically, and they would keep coming back and coming back. Finally, they were like, screw it. And so Jesus would say, you know, when they enter. They would encounter him, and he'd be like, oh, this is my guy, right? Like, I just saw him turn, you know, water into wine. I mean, God, you can do all these great things.
Uh-huh.
Bring it, right? But the question is always, do you really want to get well? Like, really? Or is this just the final straw for you? And you're really, you're so cynical. This is the danger, right? Because there's the healthy cynicism, and then there's an unhealthy cynicism. There's a healthy cynicism, as we'll talk about in a sec, but there's also just deep, toxic stuff that goes into a spiral. Because being a cynic is kind of, like, fashionable, isn't it? Like, hey, check me out. I'm questioning power to authority. This is a whole new thing today, right, with folks. It's I'm going to come and question power, their power to authority, and I'm gonna just end this thing. So I think that's a really great question to ask, and people are you really ready, or do you just want to go on a cynicism tour, and I just so happen to be your tour guide? Because if that is not going to end well. So do you really want to get well? And I think cynics need that, because again, a cynic is an optimist who's been hurt.
Oh,
deeply.
And one of the things that happens is that cynics who have allowed it to be a toxic trait over time and over pain want to see if you are going to be different and hang in there with them even when they're ugly. When I was a child psychologist back in the day, seems like 5 lifetimes ago, I would get sent the boys that were what was called, you know, oppositional defiant. Like, they come in the room and be throwing chairs at their teachers and stuff. And they would come into my office and throw stuff around. And I just stayed there with them. And I can't tell you how many times they would say, well, what the F are you still doing sitting here?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going anywhere. You know, I care about you. I want to help you. And they, like, what the, I mean.
Yeah.
Dropping F-bombs, yelling, upset, looking at me like I have three heads. Like, why haven't you left yet? You know, everyone else has left me. Everyone else has taken a hike. No one else believes in me. What are you doing here, you skinny white girl? No, but seriously, I mean, and that's part of it, is they expect to be let down. They expect to be hurt.
Yeah.
And then that's why I ask people, you know, do you want to get well? Do you want help? Do you want to get better? And usually someone like this will just start to cry.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've created a container that'll allow that,
mm-hmm.
which I think it takes a very strong person to sit there and go, bring me your worst, bring me your tantrums, bring me all this. I will hold that container for you, and I'm not leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I adore you, and I will be safe. And I think when that happens, yeah, water works.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and the goal is to be able to hold that container for yourself.
Well, let's do this then. You know, so just your listeners, Nicole, I'm sure, and us too. So Beth and I are not outside the cynicism trap, but we've been torched by someone or something, maybe an ex, you know, we just ask, come up with one of these, right? In your heart and mind while we talk, so you're able to say, okay, that's mine. That's my final straw, or that's mm-hmm. my original wound.
Yeah.
Either one, right?
Both.
Or both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, torched by an ex.
Mm-hmm.
I got that one, right?
Yeah.
And I've torched them too, so I'm sure I come up. Or the government,
mm-hmm.
or God,
mm-hmm.
or the church,
mm-hmm.
or even ourselves, like you said, you know,
yeah.
that where I've been flat out burned, I've set fire to the rain, man. I am in that place that Adele is singing about. And so we want to talk about this trap, right? Because there will be a moment when you'll fall in, and that's okay. And we want to be honest. I mean, you're human, and that's okay. Like, there's no, man, I don't think, I mean, there's no, this is very safe chat about this. You know, Beth and I aren't coming to go, wow, look at you. You know, to big me too. Yeah.
I love what you said here when you were working on this today. A great life stops for you the moment you fall into the trap of cynicism, because you've just identified with it. That's why.
Yeah, you've even attached an emotion to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love that. A great life stops for you the moment you fall into the trap of cynicism.
Yeah, so like Nicole and your listeners on this, you know, it's are you willing to just give up a great life? Because someone you've given or something you've given power to,
mm-hmm.
where you're like, yep, never again, using the never word, and so you're paralyzed, and you're stuck, and you'll never be unstuck. So are you really willing to give up a great life for this bitterness? Because you said it, Beth, you know, cynicism is just kind of the fashionable term for, look at me, I'm a skeptic, I challenge institutions and such. But really, when you drill down from that, it's bitterness. And you drill down from that, it's, you know, all the way down to, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, the existentialists are like, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, bitterness and depression and hurt. All personality traits gone wild come from hurt.
Yeah.
Every one of them. So you can heal it. You can heal it.
Yeah.
You can have the great life.
No, I mean,
there aren't many people running around whose life purpose is, true life purpose is putting everybody else down, like Twitter, whose true life purpose is to be a cynic and be cynical of everything in life. That's not, I mean, no one's born with that life purpose.
No.
So it's time to get out of the trap.
Yeah, and we're not talking about like a healthy cynicism here. Just so you know, 1600 years ago, cynicism was birthed in Greece. And some dudes there that were students of Socrates formed a group called the Cynics. They lived in the streets. Cynics means dogs. And they were dogs because they challenged the conventional ways of life and happiness that included money, sex, and power. You know, they're actually really healthy. They were, you know, Aristophanes and Diogenes were the two leaders of that movement. And they challenged the status quo that told people how to achieve happiness. They were all over that. And I think we are too. That's why we have News for the Soul, right? It's like, I get that happiness comes from happenings, but I also know I live in a life where that doesn't always happen. So my joy levels aren't, you know, I'm starting to lose myself in a very, very a world of suffering and pain. And so these folks, you know, lived in the streets, and their whole thing was they were skeptical of all the marketing efforts, you know, of what it meant in money, sex, and power. So, like, they weren't too into the marketing strategies of, say, Walmart or AT&T or Apple or the Cadillac Escalade. They were like, yeah, those, you know, we're coming up on the Super Bowl Sunday, right? You're going to see a ton of ads. Cynics looked at these commercials and went, those things will not bring
joy and happiness.
Yeah, they won't, you know. So they challenged the thinking of the establishment, and that's actually a really good thing.
Mm-hmm. That's healthy.
You know?
Yeah.
And so being cynics, you know, means you're being a realist. And you're digging deeper on what can happen on it's an inside job to have joy is what they were saying. The world is not going to bring that to you in abundance forever in a consistent way. So cynics are actually really, really good things. 1600 years ago that it started, right? So it's like, look, let's do this in a healthy way. And then, you know, Jesus was a cynic too, right? He went to the religious establishment and basically said, you're out of here. I mean, he wasn't crucified because he was challenging people. He got crucified because he was. So he freed people into this wonderful relationship with God that was away from all the rules and regulations. So it's a good thing to challenge that, right? Like when I was in alcohol treatment, you know, about 5 years ago, I was dealing with this myself and figuring out why things were happening that were not wired well in me via abuse, right? So I get there to alcohol treatment, and I realize that most of this stuff is an institutional way of doing things. Matter of fact, if anybody knows this, AA was started back in 1935, and there's many people that see the AA book as a Bible. Like, that thing is, that's it. It's the only way. And it's not. There's a lot of ways to heal. It's never about the drinking. It's never about the drugging. It's about something deep in your heart. And so for me, when I was in aftercare, I tangled with the leadership because that's just who I am. I don't like institutions are not, and establishments aren't really my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so like the bumper sticker says, right, nice people rarely change history. They don't. You know, the ones that go along with the establishment rarely change history. You know, and I'm on that side of it. I will always, challenge the status quo. It's just kind of who we are. So like Mozart, mm-hmm. Martin Luther, here's some great cynics, by the way.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela, Winston Churchill, Rosa Parks, William Wallace, Susan B. Anthony, Aristotle, Mother Teresa, Gandhi. Heard of them? I mean, They changed the world because they decided not to go along with the majority. They changed the world because they have the healthy side of the cynic chip firmly implanted in their hearts and minds. And they solidly went about raising up ideas that would shift the culture for the way greater good. That's what they did. So that's a healthy, mm-hmm. healthy piece. Yeah. It's the other side of it that Beth and I are really concerned with for you. Because there's an unhealthy, toxic side that will rob you of an amazing life. Of an amazing life. And this personality trait gone wild, and we just want to give you three areas, and then in these three areas, we have about 20 minutes. We give you three areas, and after each one of these, I'm going to, Beth and I want to give you four little words to say all week long if you're willing to do it. And I think it'll help dig you out and get you back into a life that you're willing to take risks again. Smart ones. You know, when you get burned, it's just, it's a lesson, right? That's a lesson. That's all that is. We're going to give you three. We're going to talk about toxic cynicism, a personality trait gone wild with others, because it happens with God. It happens, and then with you, it'll happen if you're not careful. So this is where cynicism is a personality trait gone wild, and it kills. And the first thing is with others. So you want to, I think Beth, talk a little bit about how a lot of the chronic pain that people bring you, once they drill down, a lot of times it's a cynicism or a pain because of others that have hurt them or circumstances or idea, whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, I think what happens is that, well, toxic cynicism, which is what we're talking about, personality trait gone wild, right? All these traits are on a continuum, and you just talked about the healthy ones, and that's a lot of us are in the healthy boat of being cynics, right? It's kind of what we do for a living. It is against the establishment that we, you know, don't love, but know very well, right? So that's true. But then this is, yeah, this is the toxic side. And toxic cynicism is born out of self-protection. And this category of where cynicism kills, where cynicism stops your beautiful life, is with others. So self-protection from others is the number one form of self-protection. Okay. I protect myself because of things that have happened to me at the hands of others, usually when someone is a small child. So they create a vow to protect themselves. I will never allow connection again. I will never do this again that caused me pain. I will never allow discomfort in my life again. I will never be uncomfortable again. All of those, the problem is, hey, the vows of self-protection get us through really hard times because we got to protect ourselves in really difficult moments, especially as kids. But what happens is the vow continues unconsciously, and then you keep living it out as an adult.
True.
And then it gets chipped away, your positive outlook, and then pretty soon you're a cynic because something happens that was really hard when you're a little bit older that brings it all flowing back. So what happens with the vow of self-protection, which is what's underneath toxic cynicism, is the outcome is I will never grow. Because if you're in self-protection, you have blocked yourself out from the sun, the rain, the moon, nutrition, if you're thinking about like the soil, all of it's blocked out when you are in total self-protection. Nothing's getting in there, so you can't grow. It's like a plant being totally blocked. It can't grow. No sun, no water, no nutrition, no light, no nothing, no air.
Yeah, you block it all out.
Yeah. So... That's where the pain of abuse or the pain, you know, that becomes the vow of self-protection,
yeah,
turns into this. And then there is no growing that occurs. Okay. So, well, it's like, Gil, it's like that example you and I were just talking about. Was that Ted Turner?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you want to talk about that? I think that's a perfect example.
Great.
Examples are really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Ted Turner was incredibly successful. People remember him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a pioneer in cable television. He was just an amazing leader in these ways, but he also had a really bitter side, and he was honest about it. He had a relationship with God for a long time, and then he just chucked it. And he chucked that because he said he prayed for his aunt, who he loved dearly. Like, he had this aunt in his life that just absolutely cared for him and showed him favor, and she was just wonderful. So he prayed for her. She had cancer, so he was praying for her to be healed, and then it didn't happen. She died.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, he goes, "I'm not just done. I'm just done with God. In that, right? I'm done with. I'm cordoning my heart off. I'm building a moat around my heart. I will never give that away again." And so he just went that direction. And I think that...
did he share about that?
He did.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. He was actually really open about it.
So then what happened?
Well, he, you know, went to his grave shaking his fist at heaven. I mean, that was kind of the bottom line. He was very...
Oh, so like he never grew through that?
No, he didn't. No, he did.
Wow.
It wasn't a happy ending. So it just did not go well for him. And so... In this area, you know, I always tell people, like with God, just to do an honest search around that. You know, it, with the others piece, it's one thing, right? My ex, my boss.
Yeah.
I mean, we just have authority figures. Why the question of authority bumper stickers are out there.
Old
relationships. Yeah, all that stuff out
marriages.
There. It's just very much like, right? And so the four words you want to say there, Nicole, when you're dealing with this area of cynicism towards someone else is, I will not head that direction where I dig a hole in myself, where I can't get out of the abyss of cynicism. And the four words, even in the midst of this, are, I will love again.
Mm-hmm.
I will love again. And I'm going to be honest on this. If you choose to cordon your heart off from love, you might as well call it a day right now in your life. You know, I'm not willing to risk love again. And I just want to go, well, you were created for love. You were created to give and receive love. And I get where there's awful things that happen out there with men, and there's awful things with women, and there's this toxicity that happens in relationships. But I'm not going to, I won't do that again. And I always, like, that's a great point. So I always tell my kids, you know, I'm always here for you, because I want them to know that nothing they could ever do would stop me from loving them.
Right.
It just is never going to happen, right? And so all of the great thinkers come back to this one, and they'll say, here are the four words, you know, for every cynic out there that has been absolutely burned, you know, who live by Adele's song.
Mm-hmm.
I will love again. I will love again. And that's on a horizontal level, but that vertical level you're talking about with Ted Turner is massive. I mean, this is the kind of stuff where I mean this. I'll have people call me and they'll say, Gil, I prayed for this. I prayed for my son or daughter. I mean, these are legit prayers. These are like, God, if you're all powerful and all loving, which you say you are, why in the world is this happening here? You know, why is this going on? And they just, so much of that, and it's real. And so I just tell people, please be honest about that. I get concerned with people that have never just said, God, F you. I get it. If you don't think God can handle your anger, read the Psalms. If you don't think God can handle your rage, you better go there. That's honesty. Oh, man, I have a friend of mine, and he just covers up his absolute rage at God by saying, well, you know, I wouldn't be where I am right now without losing my daughter. You know, I wouldn't be where I am right now. Here I am, you know, I know my daughter got blown up in a car accident.
But it's
all good. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And then he can't deal with his weight. He can't deal with staying present at his job. But he's all smiles when it comes to, I'm good. And I just go, man, you better let it rip. I mean this. I mean this in every sense. I mean, it's like, you better say, I'm so pissed off at my ex. I'm angry at my father. My brother, you know, just continues to be such a, as we call it, an F-stick, you know. I mean, come on, bring it. Bring it, you know, because if you decide just to hydroplane over those things that are deeply in your life, I think you're in trouble. So I'll tell you, this is very simple, but I'll look at him, I'll go, look, hold on for a second here, you know. God's always answering prayer, right? When he answers yes, he's developing your gratefulness and joy. When he answers what weight, he's increasing your patience and growth. And when he answers no, he has something better for you. Like, all the time. And I'll say, here are the four words you want to say around this vertically. Is God is for me. God is for me. He is with me. He's not working against me. I didn't do anything wrong that he would ever leave me. You know, on a horizontal plane, it's I will love again. And on this plane, the vertical plane, it's God is for me. And I mean, those are the four words on each side of those, the vertical and the horizontal, that will help get you out of toxic cynicism. But please, we're not saying don't be honest emotionally and spiritually. Look, if you haven't ever been disappointed with someone or with God, then I don't know what you're doing in life.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm neck deep in stories about that stuff. You know, I just am honest. You know, this week I was hurt about, or scared. I was very fearful about something this week. And Beth, and when I get fearful and scared and angry, even my eyes change color. I get that, and Beth picks that up in a minute. You know, and I'm always a little embarrassed about it.
No,
but here's the thing. I don't care anymore. Like, I love it that I'm that authentic, because that's where my playfulness comes from. That's where my love for life comes from. So my disappointment goes deep, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And Nicole, you're listening. I mean this, man. News for the soul. And this, here's news for your soul. Be honest. Be authentic. Be real. Be authentic, honest, and real. God can handle it. And let me tell you, when the world's worlding it out, this we get it. You can be like, oh my gosh, that is happening, and I don't know. I mean, I get so angry at human trafficking, so I go get involved with it. You know?
Yeah.
You're the best in the world at chronic helping people in chronic pain. You just can't. You've been there. You get it. You almost died. You had a 6-foot oxygen tank you carted around.
Yep.
You're the best healer. You know why? Because you got crushed. That's why you're a great healer. I mean, I'm serious. The greatest people that have ever lived are ones that went, not never will I do that again, but I will help others because I felt it and I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those people change history. People that fake this weird, I'm good. I'm good. I'll ask people, I'll go, how are you feeling today? They'll go, good. I'll go, that's not a feeling.
Yes, he does.
Because I really want to know.
Oh, sure, of course you do.
Like, how are you doing today? Good. It's all good. I'm like, nah, it's not a feeling. Waiting on a feeling.
That sounds like a song.
More than a feeling. Like I think Boston should just crank it right there. More than a feeling. That's their spot, right? I'm like, give me the Adele version of your life right now. What are you setting fire to the rain about? I'm serious. News for the soul. Bring your anger and your rage. Bring your sadness and hurt.
What happens is that people have the wrong idea that life is supposed to be about comfort.
True.
And it never is. Never, life isn't about comfort. It's about growth and healing and transformation and finding who you really are and, in my belief, about reconnecting to the divine, reconnecting to your source. You know, it's not about comfort. Oh, here, I'll give you a challenge-free life. You know, it's not what it is. It's not what it is. So, I mean, God is for you, but it doesn't mean your life is going to be free of challenges and problems. I mean, look at the world.
Yeah.
Like you always say, Gil, and you just said it, and I love it. It's like a verb. The world is worlding.
Yeah.
That's what the world does. Yeah.
Yeah, they do their job description.
Yeah, and we're not from here anyway, originally. I mean, you know, our spiritual self is not from this world.
Every ancient text about God says you're from, right? So it's not dust, ashes, ash, and dust, and dust. It's you go back. Right, to a loving God, how that works. But I think Lieutenant Dan and Forrest Gump is the best there on this, right? You know, I don't know if anybody's seen Forrest Gump's great. And Lieutenant Dan was his you know, quote-unquote lieutenant, sergeant at war. And then he gets his legs blown off. And so Forrest is like, hey, you been to church lately? Or, you know, Lieutenant Dan goes, that's what all these cripples down at the VA talk about. Jesus this and Jesus that. They even had a priest come and talk to me. He said, God is listening, and if I found Jesus, I get to walk beside him in the kingdom of God. He goes, did you hear what I said? Walk beside him in the kingdom of heaven. Well, kiss my crippled ass. God is listening? What a crock of shit. You know, if you haven't been there, I don't know how you've done life. I mean, you got to be in a place like that so that you can have honest, real worship, honest, real, I'm in, honest, real, you know, I mean, that, I don't know. I think you've really got that on your, you know, you're so good at this because you've been there. And when I go to a counselor, I don't want to go to a counselor that goes, my marriage is just peachy keen. It always has been. And I'm here to help you get a peachy keen marriage. I'm serious. I don't go to anybody that hasn't been divorced.
Oh, I know. No, that's why a lot of people showed up for our retreat about why is love so hard? Because it's been hard on both of us.
Yeah. I would never want to teach a retreat and go, look, I found the pot of gold at the end of the marriage rainbow. come to our retreat where I'll show you how to find yours. Yeah. I'm serious. I mean, if you haven't been absolutely burned.
Well, everyone has.
Then come on.
That's the thing. Everyone has. Everyone has.
Yeah. I love telling people I was a naive soul. And boy, did that get challenged, you know? So we just want to say out there for these, you know, it's okay to walk in some cynicism, but please find your way out. You know, I will love again, and God is for me. And then the last one is cynicism of yourself. And the whole thing there is that, look, this is the one where you go, I can let God forgive me, but I can't forgive myself.
Oh,
you know?
I hear that every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a biggie.
I hear that from clients every day. And it's like a badge of honor.
Yeah, it's an ego-driven statement.
It's a badge of honor. Well, of course, yeah, I believe that God has forgiven me, but I can't, I will not, and I can't forgive myself.
Wow, that's a God thing, isn't it? Man, God can forgive me, but I can't forgive me because I'm above God and management here. The management in my universe is me first, other things second. And
it's
a
badge of honor for self-punishment.
Yeah.
I'm going to punish myself here. Don't try to take that away from me.
I do it all the time. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the four words
on that one.
On that, yeah, for the cynic, I can forgive myself.
Yeah.
And I choose to.
I will love
I
again.
I can forgive myself.
God is for me, and I can forgive myself. Those are the words. If you're, I mean, talk about four. I don't know, these are affirmations, but these are morning statements. These are before your day begins, because you're going to walk into some. You are going to walk into some landmines. So it's, I will love again, God is for me, and I can forgive myself. This forgive yourself thing, so most of the time when I ask people, who are you really rageful at, usually it's a parent, right?
Yep.
It's a coach, teacher, ex, God, pastor, whoever, that church, whatever it would be.
Mm-hmm.
But they have something there. And then I'll go keep going until they finally say, I am so pissed at myself.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So I'll just go keep going. Because when you come to mind about yourself, that's when you're ready to heal. That's because I can't believe I gave myself over to this person. I can't believe I gave myself over to this, whatever it would be. And I'm so angry. You know, even when people say, I have a bad picker, you know,
I have a bad picker.
I'm like, yeah, you're getting there. You know, keep going, drill down. You know, I'm a huge John Mayer fan. I love John Mayer. So if any of you listen, I love Adele and John Mayer, as Peter says in Family Guy, you got a problem with that. John Mayer has a song, and it says about all the mistakes he's made, right? And then he goes, but my shadow days are over now. And it's going to be, I used to always think, and it's going to be a real bummer when John Mayer realizes they're never over.
That's funny.
But, I mean, that was a big hit, right? My shadow days are over now. And I'm like, wow, good luck with that. Because your shadow days will never end. Because our hope is not here. My hope is so not in myself. It's in God in me. That's where my hope lies. I have a person that's very dear to me in life, and he's about ready to end it. And he always says to me, when we talk about it, he'll say, I got this.
Yeah.
I got this. And I'll say, you can never trust the problem to bail you out, and the problem is you. So you're never... When I dig myself into a really, really bad place, I can't ask myself to dig myself out.
Right, because you're the one that got yourself
there. I got myself there.
Yeah.
So when I talk to people who are, at the end of phone calls where people are just throwing this darkness down about how they're just at the end of their rope, it's so funny at the end of conversations, they kind of put cologne back on. And they get their suit straightened out. I love how women are like, you know, I get my crown set again. And it's, I got this skill, thanks, bye. You know, and I'm like, you just put back on yourself, your image, your mask. I got this. I'm like, we just talked for 45 minutes about how you basically made your life a living hell. And it's okay. It's great to acknowledge that. Don't go center your crown. Don't go get your tie back on perfectly. Don't do that. Stay in that until you finally ask for something greater than yourself to help you out. Forgive yourself and then get moving. God's got you on this and he'll help dig you out. And so will other people in your life, you know. It's a good thing. So the answer there is, right, you know, I can forgive myself. I can forgive myself, you know. I will love again. God is for me. I can forgive myself. Right. So, Nicole, got any questions, comments, emails?
We
did we wake you up?
Yeah, no, I'm here. We have 3 minutes to the top, actually, with another live show right behind you. So I guess the main thing to do is main takeaways and whatever shameless self-promotion you want to throw in at the end there. What do you got?
Yeah, well, I think the main takeaway is with all the personality traits gone wild that we're talking about is that hurt people, and hurt people develop cynicism as a form of self-protection. So if that's you, take a look at it and where it came from, what your original wounding is, and how the self-protection manifests in your life, and what you do also as a form of self-punishment. Those are all really important pieces. And in terms of, you know, do you want to be over this? Do you want to be over this? And then like Gil was just saying, you know, if you've got cynicism with others, I will love again with God. God has got me. God is for me. Everything I need is on its way. And with yourself, I can forgive myself and I choose to. So in terms of, shameless self-promotion, we just finished our training, which was awesome.
Yeah.
I am tired, so I'm very grateful for Gil here helping out a lot today because it takes a lot and it's awesome, really great stuff. But in terms of what we've got coming around, we mentioned it last time, and it's really good. It's like probably the favorite thing I've done in years is our hashtag Why Is Love So Hard retreat that is in the shopping cart at besthealingsolutions.com. And you can buy it in chunks, you can purchase it all together, but we really dug in on that retreat about relationships, and we have gotten fantastic feedback on it. There's some video testimonials on there from people who went to the conference live, and it's all there for listeners if you're struggling with relationship issues or feeling bad about yourself in regards to that area of your life, divorce, pain, you know, not wanting to love again, kind of what we're talking about here. It's really awesome. So that would be, you know, besthealingsolutions.com in the shopping cart.
Yeah, spot on. I think if you're willing to really look into this, and we say this over and over again, this whole series is because we run into people, and I mean, both of us have been there where people are like, I'm there's no life before death, so I'm just going to, you know, suffer away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to do it on this perch that I have of disappointment with others. So I'm going to let you know that no one can touch me emotionally anymore. I'm going to be this robot. And really in that end, then you'll never have a life. And so this is why we're concerned. You know, this is why we want to help people. So yeah, besthealingsolutions.com. You can go check in there, and what I love about Beth, myself included, is when we help you, it is not a long-term thing. It is short-term. You know, it's like, look, let's dig deep, let's find it. When you reveal it and feel it, you can heal it. And so, yeah, there's no reason anyone needs to be in a counseling, especially talk therapy, for more than, you know, a couple months. If you have to be in there for years at a time, then I would just say, yeah, but they can go deeper. You can go deeper. And you can, I mean, it's hard. I mean, Beth always says, you know, I called Beth once, and I just said, hey, I need some help. And I'm serious. I need some help in an area. We did 2 sessions, and that's boom. And then we're off and running.
That's before we knew each other.
Yeah, it was. Yep. I snag you away. Well,
if you need help, don't hesitate to ask. And my email is beth@besthealingsolutions.com. And Gil has the same, Gil, which is GIL@besthealingsolutions.com. So if this is striking a chord for you, or you feel like you need help, or you know somebody that does, we're happy to help. And we're always here, unless I'm doing a training.
Yeah, so thank
you. I get in trouble.
Yeah, just thank you so much for letting us be on. And, yeah, we're excited. We'll close the series out in 2 weeks. So.
Okay. Thank you, Nicole.
We love you.
All right, guys.
Goodbye.
Grateful for you. We'll see you in 2 weeks. You take care.
Oh, you
too. Beth and Gil all linked up at newsforthesoul.com, and it's Conscious Parenting right after this quick reset break.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
You're listening to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained since January 1997. We began our 25th year in broadcasting in January 2022, and we're just getting started, exploring the edge of human consciousness and possibility on planet Earth with founder and journalist Nicole Marie Whitney at the helm. What's really real and what's really possible? That is what we want to know. Join us at newsforthesoul.com. newsforthesoul.com.
Yeah, man. We all love to hear the good news, so we all should rush to hear the good news. Right. But we cannot find the good news.
NSTN, NSTN. News for the soul at the very best. NSTN, NSTN. News for the soul at the very best. NSTN, NSTN. News for the soul at the very best.
Yeah, man. Just log on to www.newsforthesoul.com. Can you hear me?
We are a life-changing talk radio. We give you good news to keep you on the go. And you can also share the good news, you know. And that's the way we keep in the flow. We only focus on the positive things, yeah. We only focus on the positive things, yeah. We not go put none of the negative in there. We not go put none of the negative in there. NSTN, NSTN. News for the soul at the very best. NSTN, NSTN. News for the soul at the very best.
Log on to www.newsforthesoul.com.
Every time.
Come hear the good news. Share the good news. And we all feeling good for the good news.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Okay, a little bit of glitchiness on the switchboard. Time now for Conscious Parenting with Sandra Jones Keller, and I'll let her introduce the show and the rest of the gang. Sandra, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I'm excited to be here. And hello and welcome to the Conscious Parenting Show. We're on the road again, and we're broadcasting live from Hawaii. So if you hear some noise in the background, it's very, very windy here for some reason. So we got some furniture bumping around outside and the wind is blowing. So we're having a good time. This is our 10th episode, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today talking about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, parenting in a way that respects and honors our children as intelligent, spiritual beings.
My name is Sandra Jones Keller, and I love sharing the teachings and practices my husband and I use to raise our teenage daughter. As I stated, this is our 10th episode. Woo-hoo! That means we have 9 other awesome shows to support you on your conscious parenting journey. Make sure to check out the archives. Now, last month we talked about if your child should have a goal to participate in sports. You know, it got a little messy, as Thomas puts it. You may want to go back and listen for yourself. You actually get to hear us working out an issue live on air. We've also talked about the time when I pinched my 2-year-old daughter because she kept climbing out of the cart at the grocery store. Now, who hasn't had that happen to them? Things definitely didn't go as planned. You won't believe her response. Since this is called the Conscious Parenting Show, we like to put a practical, conscious spin on our conversations. I love what I do as a conscious parenting coach and spiritual energy healer and reader. I've written 3 books to give kids and adults more peace, power, and joy in their lives. Intuitive Communication with Your Baby's Soul, 21 Lessons to Empower the New Age Kid, and Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid. My books work together beautifully to gently bring parenting into the 21st century to be more aligned with the wise old souls that are being born today. And with that in mind, I have 2 workshops to support you on your own conscious parenting journey. Passionate Parenting in This New Age, 3 Mistakes Even Conscious Parents Make That Create Power Struggles, Stress, and Anxiety, and How to Avoid Them, and DIY Mindfulness for Teens and Tweens. Now, both of these virtual workshops are self-guided so that you can do them at the time and pace that works for you. In Passionate Parenting in This New Age, I share the 3 mistakes I've discovered that have kids push back, making you feel like you're in a tug of war with them. You'll learn tools that you can use immediately to reduce the friction and have more peace, joy, and confidence in your parenting experience. And in DIY Mindfulness for Tweens and Teens, students learn practical mindfulness concepts for everyday life. Topics will help them recognize and manage their emotions and teach the power of their thoughts. They'll also gain tools to help them regulate and ease stress and anxiety. And this is really awesome because kids walk away just realizing how powerful they are, but how magnificent they are. You can go to my website, sandrajoneskeller.com, on the courses page to register for these life-changing classes. Now, back to the show. I'm joined today by my husband, Thomas, and our 17-year-old daughter, Mecca. Thomas is a professional artist, sculptor, and course creator. He did all the illustration for Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid and designed 2 of my book covers. He is also the author of The Mirror, 3 Easy Steps to Free Yourself from Fear, Anger, and Anxiety, and That's Just the Beginning. You can find out more about him at thomaskellerart.com. Mecca is a competitive ice skater and artist. She likes collecting stuffed animals and enjoys embroidering, sewing, and painting. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Now, today's topic is, drumroll, how do you handle your child having a tantrum in public? I'm going to start by reading the essay, That's My Child on the Floor, from my latest book, Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid, which is a series of endearing and engaging stories about parenting, life, and the lessons we've learned over 15 years. And if you're hearing sirens in the background, just excuse us. Like I said, we're on vacation in Hawaii, and there's a lot going on down the street. Then my husband will read his version of the incident that prompted this question. If you'd like to follow along, the ebook can be purchased on Amazon, and it's available immediately. That way you can make notes and email or call in your questions. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call us at 646-595-4274. All righty, we're going to get started with my essay called That's My Child on the Floor. Lenox Square is a lively mall to people watch in Atlanta. It's very fashionable and attracts a wide variety of clientele, hipsters, plain James, wealthy, and wannabes. We'd go there frequently to meander indoors, getting out of the heat or cold, and to have lunch or sit at the coffee bar gawking at the crowd. Basically, we'd make a day of it. This Saturday afternoon was particularly crowded. Lots of families with kids and groups milled around. Mecca loved the long trek from the parking structure to our favorite eatery at the opposite end of the mall. At 2 years old, she preferred to walk like a big girl rather than ride in her stroller. Thomas held her hand as I sauntered ahead, popping in and out of stores and window shopping, enjoying my freedom of not being totally responsible for her at that moment. When I reached the cafe where we had planned to eat lunch, I realized I had lost them. I waited a moment before retracing my steps down the bustling corridor. I didn't think they were too far behind, so I browsed as I walked. Sounds like some kid is having a tantrum, I mused as I approached the loud noise. As I got closer to the ruckus, I saw Thomas casually standing in the walkway staring down at the floor. I followed his gaze. Oh, man, that's Mecca on the floor. I was paralyzed. Should I intervene or run the other way? Bystanders walked by glaring at my daughter flailing on the ground. A full-blown tantrum was in progress, screaming, crying, arms and legs thrashing about. Some shook their heads in disgust. Others just laughed and kept going. One young man was courteous enough to point her out to his friends, shake his head, and smirk. I looked back up at Thomas. He was totally unaffected by her tantrum and his audience. He was giving Mecca space and freedom to express her emotions without being embarrassed or angry. Observing that he had the situation completely under control, I quickly turned around and scurried back to our meeting place before being spotted by either one of them. I really didn't feel like dealing with a tantrum in the middle of a busy mall on one of my few days off from being a full-time mom. A few minutes later, I spotted Thomas and Mecca ambling toward me. He was holding her hand and calmly walking at her pace. For the most part, Mecca looked pretty good, considering she was just flailing on the ground. Her eyes were still a bit red and puffy, but the tears had stopped streaming and snot wasn't running out of her nose. You guys ready to eat? I asked as they approached. Yep, said Thomas. You okay, Mecca? She nodded. We ordered lunch, then Thomas filled me in on their last few minutes. I listened intently before admitting I had fled the scene. We laughed and ended up having a lovely afternoon. After that day, Mecca lost interest in throwing tantrums. I guess she figured they're only fun when someone reacted to them, and it was clear that at least her daddy wouldn't. We're live on News for the Soul Radio. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274. Once again, I'm your host, Sandra Jones Keller, and my guests are my husband, Thomas, and our 17-year-old. Go ahead and read your story.
Okay. The title of my story is The Exorcist and the Buddha. Have you ever watched a child throwing an outrageous tantrum in a public place and wondered what could create such horrible behavior? Well, my judgment day came when my wife, our 2-year-old daughter, and I traveled to Lenox Square, a favorite place for us to escape the heat and humidity of Atlanta in the summer. Lenox is the heart of Atlanta's stylish, upwardly mobile world, filled with people of diversity and perfect for people watching and being watched. From day one, my daughter has been strong-willed. So when she decided to walk, I held her hand as we began our hike from the parking lot to Panera Bread for lunch. Entering the mall, we descended the long escalator into a massive swarm of humanity. My wife took advantage of her freedom from childcare by quickly walking ahead, window shopping with childlike awe in her eyes and a skip in her step. My walk slowed to a crawl as my daughter and I weaved our way through the masses from one end of the mall toward the other. I don't know what set my daughter off. Maybe it was my refusal to stop at the intoxicating smell of baking chocolate chip cookies at Starbucks, but she decided it was go time, and within seconds, she was wailing on the floor on her back as if possessed by a demon in some exorcist movie. She was screaming at siren level, arms and legs thrashing about like worms exposed to the sunlight from underground. The flood of people in the mall parted as if we were Moses at the Red Sea. They continued to walk around us, many aghast, others amazed, a few concerned. Then a miracle happened. As quickly as my daughter collapsed, I became possessed by the Buddha. A warm feeling of calmness and quiet infused my body. I stood over her, protecting her from the crowds, in love with her. I didn't say a word. There were no pleas for her to stop it or to knock it off. I wasn't ashamed, embarrassed, or indifferent. I just stood there in love. I was clear that I was willing to go through this with her as long as she wanted to, and that I was not interested in conceding to the demonic behavior. I also knew that I would not let any well-meaning person interfere, and nobody attempted to. I don't remember if our possessions went on for 3 seconds, 3 minutes, or 3 hours, but at some point she changed her mind and relaxed. I put down my hand to help her up, brushed her off, wiped her eyes, and we resumed our walk to Panera Bread to meet my wife for lunch. There was no judgment from me, no lessons for me to impart. I don't remember meeting my wife at the cafe, but she said that we did, and we had a fine lunch together. Regardless of how the rest of my parenting record appears, I will forever have my golden Buddha moment. Oh, and my daughter never chose that behavior again.
All right. Thank you, Thomas, for that wonderful story. We're live on News for Soul Radio. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net. or call in to 646-595-4274. Once again, I'm your host, Sandra Jones Keller, and my guests are my husband, Thomas, and our 17-year-old daughter, Mecca. Also, feel free to email or call in your questions about other conscious parenting concerns, even if they're not specifically related to today's show. Once again, that email is ontheair@telus.net, or call in to 646-595-4274. All right, so Thomas, you wrote one story in the book, which I thought was fabulous, and boy, do you look good. Oh, my gosh, when I was actually organizing the stories, I had two stories back to back where you looked so good, I had to, like, split them apart because I wasn't looking so good in some of them. Okay, so just talk a little bit more about your experience, literally standing in the middle of the mall with Mecca in a full-blown tantrum, because we've all seen parents, and there's so many different reactions to tantrums, and it can be very embarrassing. So just talk a little bit more about your experience.
Okay, and a preface to that is when I wrote this story, I must say I made myself look very, very good in it with the language of the story. But on a more practical level, I was very clear that I was not going to entertain her behavior in that situation, and that it didn't bother me either. And I know that it can be very difficult for parents in a grocery store when their child goes off and they just want the noise to quiet down. It feels embarrassing. But at that moment on that day, I wasn't interested in entertaining behavior, and I didn't dissociate from it.
That had happened to you where she just, like, fell out?
Yeah, that was the first time she had fallen out like that, on the floor wailing like that. And I really was clear that, you know, I've read you my story and what I did during the story. And even a bigger view of all of our parenting is that we've always wanted our child to be self-determining, to reap the consequences of her behaviors, her causes. And so even from day one after her birth, we never fed her the milk every 2 hours during the night, which the nurses practically demanded that we do when we were in the hospital.
We were supposed to wake her up to feed her. We did it once.
So it never felt right, so we did it once. It didn't feel right. It was horrible. For all of us, she screamed and cried, and then we got ourselves straight and said, wait a minute, she has an innate intelligence within her. Children have been being born for thousands of years before hospitals and doctors, and have come out just fine in so many cases. So we never woke her up again. That was the first time we encouraged her to trust her own innate intelligence. And then as she grew older, we gave her free rein of all the sugar at, 11 or so? 11 years old. And she overdid it a little bit in the beginning, but then she dialed it back and found her place, her intelligence place for it. So we have asked her or given her the responsibilities at different ages in her life.
Yeah, but talk about tantrums, because I've seen kids throwing tantrums, and there are as many different kinds of tantrums that there are. There is as many different responses.
Right.
And my response in that moment was I saw all of this going on. Now, okay, I will say, though, had you not had it under control, I would have come and intervened. But I came back and was shocked to see this whole thing going on. But I looked at you, and you had it under control. And it felt like, actually, if I had interfered, I think it would have made things worse, because I probably would have tried to get it off the floor or stuff. Whatever I would have done would have been counter to what you were doing. But because you were calm, you know, you had the whole area under control, I let you alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you literally feel like you were in an altered state, or you don't remember?
No, I didn't really feel like I was possessed by the Buddha. That was just some glorious writing phrase. Honestly, I knew this information about not entertaining behaviors you don't want and entertaining behaviors you do want, and it made perfect sense to me. And it's all when I've watched other kids with other parents in grocery stores, it always seemed like the parent was just trying to get the kid to be quiet because it was so embarrassing for the parent. And I understand that feeling completely, but, you know, I only did this one time, and then she never did that behavior again. So sometimes we have to suck it up and be willing to be embarrassed to change a behavior. And she was just, 2 years old, just experimenting with her behaviors and finding out what worked and what didn't. So it really was, as I wrote it, I was neither mad at her or afraid about it or embarrassed by it. I was, it was more important that I be with her than I care how my feelings were.
And the part that I really liked in the story was at the end, toward the end, where you say there was no judgment for me, no lessons for me to impart. You know, that's like really beautiful. So you didn't like get her up off the floor and then start lecturing her. Like, admittedly, I have kind of done a few times in my life. There was none of that. It was like you just got her up, cleaned her off, brushed her off, and kept moving.
Well, I mean, how many times have we heard it said that experience is the greatest teacher of all? And she just had her experience, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all I can say about it. Really, it was very clean feeling.
Very good. Live on News for the Soul Radio, just checking in with you, Nicole. Are there any calls or emails? And I don't have access to my email, so
okay, well, people on the board are just listening, and no specific questions as yet, except I'd like to invite you to delve deeper into how this Buddha-like handling, this admirable handling of this situation with the tantrum, what do you think the reason is that it never repeated?
Because it got no reward. There was literally no juice for our daughter. She got no chocolate chip cookies. She got no angry parents. She got nothing. I didn't dislike her. I wasn't embarrassed. So it was a zero on the scale of what am I getting out of this? And it was pretty easy to make a choice from there on out, I think, for her.
It's amazing.
I love that because, you know, you talk about letting her make a choice. And, Mecca, I know that you were only two, so I don't know if you have any feedback about this, but from your perspective, why do you think you never threw a tantrum like that again? If you have any thoughts.
Probably because, like he said, I didn't get anything out of it. There was no reward. So I just didn't see the point of doing it again.
And it was exhausting, too. Okay, so we're going to kind of not jump around here, but last month, toward the end of our episode, Thomas, you said that you felt the show was a little messy. So what did you mean by that? Okay, and so just as a reminder, last month we were talking about, should your child have an end goal to participate in sports? And then Mecca said a couple of things. So we actually started working out the conversation on the air. So you thought it was a little messy. So what did you mean by that?
When I said a little messy, I think best I remember that our daughter said some information that I had not heard before about the subject. And then we had to just on the spot in the moment talk it out and see what was real and what wasn't real. And honestly challenge each other a little bit to make sure that what we were perceiving was what was happening.
Yeah, because she was talking about moving forward in her skating and that she didn't know what to do. Oh, no, the whole conversation was that we weren't pushing her enough.
Well, Mecca, say what you said so I don't put words in your mouth.
I said that Candace said that she thought I lacked discipline because of how I was raised.
Yeah, Candace is her ice skating coach, and Candace has her own set of beliefs and perceptions of the world and how parenting should take place. And we, my wife and I, have our own unique set. And so I think you just brought that up, and
I had not heard that
before. We were both surprised because we had not heard that before. So we worked it out on the spot.
And really working it out, and this comes back to why I call this the Conscious Parenting Show, working it out means that you're working it out, that you don't have all the answers in the moment, that you don't have to be perfect, you don't have to even be right, but you want to uncover the layers, and you want to get to some type of authentic truth or authenticity where you start owning your participation in your life and in what's happening. And so that's why Thomas started calling Mecca on it, because to put the blame on us or anyone else then takes away from her power of creating her own life. And so that's why we talked about it, and that's why I brought it up. And I'm also bringing that up again because after listening to not only that show but some of our other shows, I think that, and I could be making this up, that some people could perceive our parenting as permissive parenting.
Even before we go to that,
let
me talk about what we had just said and Mecca and her ice skating coach had said. I thought last month when we did the show, when Mecca said that about what her ice skating coach said, I didn't hear clearly the part that said her ice skating coach, Candace, said that. So I thought that Mecca was saying that in part. And it wasn't, as Mecca's made clear now, it wasn't her, it was the coach that was saying that.
Okay.
So it wasn't even an issue, really. It was just one person, the ice skating coach perception of the world and parenting and ours.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two different, very different ways. And that leads into the idea of permissive parenting, which you were going to bring up.
Well, yeah, just like I said, I was just kind of thinking about it and wondering if people could view our parenting style as permissive parenting. We call it conscious parenting. And so what are your thoughts? And permissive parenting is defined as permitting your child to do whatever they want to do and don't demand anything from them. So that's like just the kind of the blanket definition of permissive parenting. And then we, you know, looked at it a little bit more. But what are your thoughts of permissive parenting versus our style of conscious parenting?
As I've thought about it, I don't think our style of parenting is permissive parenting at all. I think our style of parenting is full, accepting full self-responsibility for what one is creating. So we have given our daughter a lot of freeway and leeway to experience her own effects of her causes, of her thinking, so that she becomes fully responsible. And in the case of proceeding in ice skating lessons, we love her, we support her, and she knows that, and we would do anything in the world to give her opportunities, but we won't do the discipline of ice skating for her or make her do off-ice exercises and workouts. That's got to come from within her. And there's other areas in her life where she has accomplished excellence on a consistent level. So she could look to that area and apply it to ice skating if she really wanted it in ice skating. So I think it calls on one to go to a deeper level of, do I really want it enough to put in that kind of time and discipline for it?
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, because what we're looking at, you know, in terms of being self-regulating and disciplined, that I think it's a skill and it's a tool, and those are things that we've been working on with her her whole life. And so if you look at her schoolwork and the projects and the things that she wants to do, she's very self-motivated, self-regulated in a lot of different areas. So she definitely has the skill set for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mecca, do you have any thoughts about that?
No.
So we're live on News for the Soul Radio. Take advantage of this opportunity to have your questions answered live on the air. Feel free to email or call in your questions about other conscious parenting concerns, even if they're not specifically related to today's topic. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274. And Nicole, I'm just going to check in with you. Any calls or emails?
We've got an email from Connie in Colorado, and she's asking how you approach discipline from the perspective of conscious parenting.
Well, that's I wish I could get more information. How do we approach discipline? What our main, and I'll answer and then I'll let Thomas answer. So our main parenting tools from the very beginning have been universal laws and mirroring. So universal law is whatever you're putting, it's like, you know, the golden rule, treat your neighbor as you would treat yourself. Whatever you're putting out there will come back to you. And so what we've talked to Mecca about, you know, we don't go around saying, oh, it's bad to steal, it's bad to lie. It's if you steal, you will get stolen from. If you lie, you will get lied to, because then the responsibility of the experiences that she's having, she can relate to what her thoughts and actions were. So then discipline becomes a whole different thing, not about trying to control her behavior, but trying to get her to see that her thoughts and behaviors create a certain outcome. And so that's how we've handled it. And then mirroring is, you know, if I see it, I be it. And so if there's something going on, then what Thomas and I will do is like say, okay, what's going on in the house that has this showing up? And then we start doing our own forgiveness work and then see what happens. And sometimes a conversation may need to be had, or quite often the issue disappears when we clean up our own mess inside. What do you think, Thomas?
I love what you just said, and I think the key word is the definition of discipline. For you and I, Sandra, in my mind, disciplining is when we point out the cause and effect, the thought and what happened. So hypothetically, let's say Mecca told a string of long lies, or just made up a story about anything. And then a week later, a friend of her just tells her a whole big lie story. And then the next day, my daughter finds that out, and she's appalled by that behavior of a friend lying to her. Well, our discipline would be to simply point out, well, remember when you lied a week earlier, mm-hmm. and this is the come around for that? Maybe you can see how those connect to one another, who put that cause into effect in the first place so that it came back to you. And that's what discipline is to us. It is to me. It's staying conscious, staying aware of our thoughts and how we're always creating with our thoughts, whether it be lies, honesty, love or hate or all of that.
And then also, so Connie, we did a story a few months ago called Too Much Juice, where my husband was getting up every morning and making organic fresh squeezed celery juice for my daughter because she had a rash and that was helping with her rash. And then come to find out she had been pouring out half of the juice. And so I suggest you go back and listen to how we worked that out, because Thomas's initial impulse was to punish her. It's like, well, you did this and you did this. But after we talked it out, we really saw that she had been trying to tell us that this juice was making her sick. We weren't listening. And she took it into her own hands to find a way to manage this juice so that it worked to her benefit. And so ultimately, that's what we've taught her. It's like, you are responsible for yourself. So if something's not working, ultimately you're responsible. So she did come to us. She said, you know, the juice is making me sick, but we were so excited that it was helping with her rash, we just didn't even hear it. And so she took it into her own hands and started throwing out half of this juice secretly. And so the answer could have been to punish her, to take away her allowance, to take away some kind of privilege. But once we worked through the whole situation, we saw that she handled it in a very responsible way, you know, in a way that worked for her. So thank you, Connie in Colorado. Nicole, any other questions before we go on?
Actually, she sent a part two. Okay. Part two being, how do you set boundaries without being or maintaining conscious parenting? Setting boundaries.
Setting boundaries.
Maybe mirroring.
Yeah, I think that still falls into exactly what we've been talking about. So setting boundaries. So, for example, we did a show called It All Started with the Ice Cream, where we go through a series of different episodes of, like, Mecca kind of ODing on sugar, and then where at 11 years old, we let her self-regulate her sugar. And so we didn't just, like, throw her in the lion's den and say, here. It was like, you know, up until that time, we talked about the effects of sugar. She had the experience, a negative experience of the effects of sugar. And then she had been on one dessert a day. And so at 11, we decided that she could start self-regulating her own sugar. And so she took a deep dive into sugar for a while. And then, Mecca, I want you to speak on this. So she took a deep dive into sugar for a while. And then a couple years later, she just decided that she was going to go in a different direction. And so the boundary was, you know, up until 11, you get one dessert, you know the effects, and then we're going to watch and see how you handle this. And there were times when I cringed because I felt she was eating too much sugar, but at 14 years old, she cleaned it up and said, you know, I've started cutting back on my sugar because I didn't like the effects of it. And so that's very powerful that a 14-year-old has the awareness to do that. So, Mecca, talk a little bit about boundaries, or how do you think that all works for you?
What do you want me to say? Like, what? I need more specific.
Well, so specifically we're going to talk about the sugar or the juice?
Either one.
So talk about the sugar. Because Connie's question in Colorado is, how do you set boundaries while maintaining conscious parenting? And so with the sugar, although you did say on air that you thought we were being irresponsible at one point with the sugar. But so how do you set boundaries while maintaining conscious parenting? And so look at the sugar, for example, and how you worked your way
through that? Just say a little bit.
Well, as we said, I started eating a lot of sugar once I didn't have a limit. And then after a few years, I reduced it to consistently about one dessert a day. And now I kind of also gave up on that because I just eat dessert whenever I feel like it. So sometimes I will eat multiple desserts a day, but I do try to regulate as best as I can. So I'm kind of in the middle now, which might be regressive, but that's just the progress.
Okay. And so, Connie, you know, and so when you talk about setting boundaries, she did have boundaries, and then within, you know, letting her self-regulate, we kept an eye on her. If she had gone, like, too far one direction or, like, too far left, we probably would have stepped in. But, you know, we observed and then watched her turn it around. And so at 17, to have the awareness of, because oftentimes she won't eat dessert. Like, we will be out somewhere and she'll look on the menu. It's like, no, I don't want it. So she doesn't eat it just for the sake of eating it because it's there. It's like she'll eat it if she wants it. And if she doesn't want it, she doesn't eat it.
And I guess I would like to say another little twist on this idea, and this may be a different interpretation of boundaries. With our daughter, we have never said to her, clean your plate. Eat everything on your plate. We have never said that to her, and if she didn't eat everything on her plate, it was a non-issue. We never brought it up. And now I have witnessed in her since she was 10 years old, that she regulates her own eating perfectly for her hunger, not for the size of her plate, so that it's a whole different lifestyle than when I grew up and I was told to clean my plate because for no particular reason. So that's also going back to her intuitive intelligence, her innate intelligence, to keep her connected to that. When she's not hungry, she just doesn't eat. So it's a non-issue. I hope that helps something somewhere. I'm not sure.
Nicole, let us know if she sends in a follow-up. Thank you, Connie, for those questions. And are there any other questions, Nicole?
Last caveat on that idea. in the very basic bottom line, everything our children shows us that disturbs us is something that we are doing or thinking in our own world. So if I clean up whatever my child is showing me, if I clean that up in myself, which means knock it off or forgive myself for it, then that will actually just disappear from my child.
And I'll give an example of that. I had a friend of mine not too long ago, you know, talk about she had gotten really upset and had, like, kind of thrown something. And then later her child started throwing things when they got upset. And so you can look at the child and say, don't do that. That's bad. You shouldn't throw things. You shouldn't get upset. Or you clean up your own anger and how you deal with it, because the child saw this. And it's like, okay, that's how I deal with anger. So instead of trying to discipline the child, you know, if we clean up how we are handling life and our things that we're doing, then it creates a conscious space for our kids to thrive. But, you know, I use the example of, I hear a lot of parents and moms in particular talk about anxiety, how anxious they are, how nervous they are, how scared they are about the world. And then lo and behold, you hear their kids start talking about anxiety and how scared they are and how, you know, anxious they are about things. And so then they want to give the kids medication for the anxiety. But if we as parents, or if you as a parent, are going around with anxiety and fearfulness, if you start cleaning that up, it will help your child to relax and feel safe in the world. But it's hard for your child to feel safe in the world if you're terrified of everything. And so I want to kind of weave that back into Connie when you talk about discipline. That's why, you know, we're talking about universal laws and we're talking about mirroring, because you're trying to discipline a behavior that's based on something else. You're trying to control a behavior instead of healing the problem. So, okay, so my kid is hitting people at school. But then, you know, is there anger in the household? Is someone frustrated and hitting walls? You know, but so instead of just looking at the behavior of the kid, let's look and see what's going on in the household, start dealing with that so that the kid can relax.
It almost always starts with us, the parents. It actually always starts with us, the parents.
Yeah. Nicole, I think you were going to say something or add something.
No, we just had one more question. This is from Elizabeth in New York regarding her 15-year-old son. And the question is around lack of motivation. Basically, he just wants to play video games all the time and isn't participating, cleaning up, and listening. So she's asking for a conscious parenting solution for that.
You know, I keep hearing this a lot from parents, and I don't know that I have a cure-all, but I will, since this is not the first time this question has come up, I'm going to just say what I've observed. So what I have observed is that as soon as kids can hold a device, they have a device in their hand, because it's easier to have them be distracted doing something than to engage. And so if they're not learning how to be with themselves, entertain themselves, be creative, then that's a skill, I think, that needs to be developed. And so now, you know, you have a 15-year-old son who just wants to play video games. I mean, I would say, you know, start with engaging more as a family, because what I've also seen are kids and parents out to dinner, and the parent is on their device. They're not engaging or interacting with their kid. And so I think by starting to put the devices down, like at dinner time, creating family time, creating other activities, doing physical things together, and modeling that and giving them an option. You know, if you're bored and there's nothing else to do, then you're going to want to just play video games all day. But maybe you haven't discovered that you're a great artist or a musician or an athlete or something. And so I would start, you know, by one, looking as a parent to see, where am I not motivated? Because we've already talked about mirroring universal laws. So where am I not motivated? Where are there things in my life that I say I want to do, but I don't have the energy to do, or I don't feel like doing them, or I don't feel like going to the gym, or I don't feel like eating healthy, or I don't, you know, those types of things, which is a lack of motivation. And so I would start once again with, you know, where is there maybe a lack of motivation in the house, and then start creating some kind of structure or activity. Once a week, you guys go out for a walk together. You take up a sport, take up a hobby, to do something to start building those synapses of creativity. So, Thomas, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that these video screens, and I love using mine, the video screen is the drugs of 2020s. And it's escape, the same reason people take drugs and smoke, whatever. It's just another form of escape, and it's very seductive. And we're down the rabbit hole before we're consciously aware of it. And so as a parent, I can only guess, imagine that if it was happening to my child, I personally would have to find ways to begin to engage my child on a personal level, again, to pull them away and out of the video monitor and not give up. And just not give up, and rules probably won't do it. It would, for me, it would be actually coming up by entering my child's world in conversation rather than trying to have them enter my world. I've often thought with my daughter in the later years, the teen years, wow, I need to enter her world. Mm-hmm. What is she like? What is she interested in? Because I can become so obsessed with my own world of doing that I create a distance between us. So, and it's an ongoing thing for myself to continually remind myself, let me get out of my world and enter her world, and so I can communicate and be with her.
Okay, and so Mac, I know you have you've mentioned this before, and there was actually a term. So, what was the term that you used?
Oh, iPad kid.
iPad kid. Yeah. So
yeah.
Say more about that and say what your thoughts are, especially being a teenager.
What is an iPad kid?
Oh, you know, iPad kids are basically, you see them in public. They're the kids usually between, like, 4 and 7 with an iPad, and they're always in some weird position. They're always, like, halfway off of something, and they're usually too sticky. Kids are just sticky in general, but, like, they're always, like, snotty. And I know that's just how kids are, but, like, there's so many of them that obviously now there's a term, iPad kid. So, and a lot, nobody really likes iPad kids because they're usually not very nice to be around or, like, just not, I don't know how to explain it, but, like, not fun to interact with even as they grow older. So, I don't know where I was going with this. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Mecca. In your couple of close friends, are they anywhere like that now that you're 17 and they're all either 16 to 18? Your couple of close friends, are they anything like this?
Not really, because most of them are homeschooled, and homeschool kids are completely different than public school kids. So, no.
And so I remember when you were 3 or 4, actually 4, and this, okay, so parents, this is another show. It's called A Bedtime Alarm. When you decided that, you know, you wanted to stay up late, and so we worked it out. But one of the guidelines that we created was if you were going to stay up to 1 o'clock at 4 years old, you were not going to be on electronics, so that you had to be creative. And so what did you do during that time?
I cut the hair off my dolls a lot, played with stuffed animals, cut paper. I really like scissors. As we can tell, cut my hair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And so
I had
now,
toys
so, what do you, so what do you do now when you're in your room up to all hours of the night?
Anything, homework, art, cleaning my room, organizing my room, figuring out why my room smells. trying to keep it clean, random art projects that I have ideas for.
So what can you give, like, maybe a suggestion for parents to try to get their teen away from being an iPad kid, as you call them, or how can they begin to redirect them?
I don't know.
Mecca, I know that you love Minecraft. Is that the name of it?
Not anymore, but okay.
No, D&D. D&D?
Yeah.
No?
So
which one are you talking about? They're two different things.
The one that you helped the science guy teach the kids, Minecraft.
Yeah. My Minecraft knowledge is outdated because I haven't played in years, so it's not really like a current interest, but continue.
why did you not become obsessed with it?
I did for a while. I go through phases of everything. So now I just don't play it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Elizabeth in New York. Nicole, any other questions?
We are actually in the, 4 minutes to the top. That went fast. So I would suggest wrapping up, tying it all together, and some shameless self-promotion at the end. Good to go.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Was it Elizabeth in New York?
Yes.
I just really want to say, reiterate that unconditional love, really resilience, sticking to it, pull them out of it inch by inch, little by little. I don't have any answers or magic cures, but your child's worth it.
That's good. Absolutely. Your child is worth it. And, you know, like I said, I would go back to looking at maybe a lack of motivation in the house or, you know, what is there anything that you could clean up that maybe you've been wanting to do, but you just, you know, lack the motivation and, you know, and start doing those things and holding the space for creativity and focus and motivation. Start holding that space and seeing your child as whole, perfect, and complete and letting them live into that space because, you know, the nagging and the complaining and stuff is only going to push them away. So, you know, I know that it can be very frustrating. So as best possible, you know, like, your child's worth it. Start loving them and then start doing your own forgiveness work. Whatever you're seeing that disturbs you, you know, I do a process called Ho'oponopono. Thomas does it, and he also does his own type of forgiveness work. But any type of forgiveness work where anything that's disturbing you, you start forgiving it and clearing that space so that something else can show up in the space. All right. Well, we've come to the end of our show. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Thomas and Mecca, for being here with me today. The Conscious Parenting Show is live the second Friday of each month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on News for the Soul Radio. Please visit the archives for more enlightening shows and tell all your friends. We'd love to get more questions. And remember, my books are available on Amazon. I'll be reading more stories from Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid. So go ahead and get your copy on Amazon so you can follow along. And let me know if you have a favorite story you'd like me to read and discuss live on the air. For more information about me, visit my website at sandrajoneskeller.com. And just a quick reminder, I have two workshops to support you on your conscious parenting journey, Passionate Parenting in This New Age, Three Mistakes Even Conscious Parents Make That Create Power Struggles, Stress, and Anxiety, and How to Avoid Them, and DIY Mindfulness for Tweens and Teens. Both of these virtual workshops are self-guided so that you can do them at the time and pace that works for you. And Elizabeth, your son may enjoy the DIY mindfulness. It's something that you guys could watch together, talk about, and start implementing some of these conscious parenting tools with him, like fostering his own outcomes. And so that's why I like the DIY mindfulness. It's teaching the kids to do it themselves, but it's something that you guys can do together. So go to my website, sandrajoneskeller.com, on the courses book page to register for these life-changing classes. And until next time, happy parenting.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
News for the Soul phone lines are now open. Call in now for a free intuitive reading on the air. Dial 646-595-4274. That's 646-595-4274.
Next on News for the Soul, the Modern Day Medium with Julie. Julie is a natural-born medium and healer working with the light, channeling messages and healing energy from spirit. Using natural healing and mediumship abilities, She has dedicated her life to helping many break through physical, emotional, and mental trauma and grief. Julie offers practical, insightful, and detailed help to help you feel the magic that is being connected to your inner soul. Please welcome Julie back to News for the Soul.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Okay. Take two. Let's see if this is working now. Hopefully you can hear me now, and hopefully we can find Julie on the board. Julie, are you there, and can you hear me?
I'm here. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yay. Yes, that all just helps so ever much, doesn't it?
It does.
All righty then. Well, here we are. And the lines are packed in. Welcome back. Let's get you to bring us up to speed. What's new?
What's new? Oh, wow. So much stuff is new in my world. Lots of changes, moving my clinic space, doing a whole bunch of new programs just for, like, for myself and my own development and what I'm bringing to the collective. So there's some super, super exciting things happening. And even in my readings, which is kind of really profound for me, even I'm finding in my one-to-one sessions, I bring in a loved one that's passed over first, and it's almost like as if now all of a sudden loved ones are no longer just wanting to give you validation. They are the ones who are opening up dimensions and portals that may not have been, you know, available to us, or maybe we didn't realize that they were available to us. And all of a sudden there's just these profound, like, messages and wisdom and healing that comes through. So I feel super excited to be sharing that with a lot of people as well. So I'm very, very excited for what's coming up for the collective.
Well, that does sound promising. Have you sensed a profound positive shift in the collective in the last month in particular?
I have. Do you know what? I know a lot of people have been saying that, you know, the last month has been really heavy, but, you know, transformation does create a sense of heaviness, and it's just a burden, and it's more about finally releasing all that heaviness and actually feeling into it. So I feel like we've been numb for a long time, not necessarily because we haven't wanted to feel, but I think there's just been so much going on within the world for the last couple of years that we haven't had a chance to really stop and feel. It's always been about what someone else is doing, or how can I help someone else, and what's going on, like, in the world. So we're really finally going, oh my God, I'm feeling this heaviness and it's got to go. What do I need to do about that? And that's where we're finding a lot of people coming to the services like your show, going to spiritual mentor. So it's moving away from mentoring of to say, like, oh, so what are your career goals, or what is this? It's more about, what do I want to do as a person, as an individual, as a community member? So it's really coming like full circle, where we are focusing more on the collective. And I think that is allowing people to feel lighter and to feel more excited about what the road ahead looks like.
Love it. Well, if something's happening, that's for sure. I'll just let you know now, we've got lines packing in. Where would you like to start us off?
I reckon let's if the lines are packing in, you know me, let's do it. Let's take some calls.
Diving in. All right. this is funny. I've got to get my glasses on because the numbers are getting smaller this week. It's been a long week over here. Okay, I'm going to guess that that's 510. 510, you're live. What's your first name? Where are you calling in from?
California. My name is Aaron.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Aaron. How you going? Oh.
I'm all right at the moment.
Okay. And how can I help you today?
Well, I would like to have a general reading.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there any particular, just because there's a lot of phone calls, like callers online, is there any particular area that you want me to focus on?
Yes. Can I pick three or just two?
Give me the three, and I'll see how fast I can get information for you, and we'll go from there.
All right. Finances, romance, and spirituality.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so like your own spiritual development when you mean spirituality?
Correct.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's go into your finances aspect. And straight away they talk about, it's not just about finances, it's also about career prospects. So it feels like for me, the way they're saying it to me is like there's been a wall up when it comes to like career prospects. Where are you going? Where are you moving forward? What opportunities are being presented to you? And that unfortunately has also like hindered a little bit from our financial perspective. And it's not just recently. They're saying to me, this seems to be either like a pattern or some, or like a cycle that has repeated itself a couple of times for you in this lifetime, but I also feel like it's been something that has happened in past lifetimes. So when it comes to your finances, they are saying to me that, look, 2023 does feel like it's going to be a more abundant year for you based on some of the choices and the decisions that you are going to be faced with. And they keep showing me like the next 3 months feels like there's a lot of things coming at you that you are going to have to let go of. They're also like decisions that you have to make in order to, for you to move forward in life as well. So it's almost like as if at the moment I've got a block, but it's something that's happened in the past. And then in the next 3 months, like certain things will unravel. I feel like even like, and when I say like the truth has been hidden, it means that maybe you haven't been able to see things clearly, or either spirit has been hiding stuff from you just so you can kind of either learn lessons or really kind of sit in where you are at. But I also feel like certain people or situations haven't necessarily given you all the details in order for you to kind of move forward. And because of all of this, this is why there's a bit of stagnant energy around like finances and how you make money moving forward. Does that make sense, why that's all come through?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. But again, they keep saying like the next 3 months, even though they might feel like it's a little bit of a roller coaster, and it feels like very similar to maybe what you've been experiencing the last 5 months. They talk about the number five. So it's what you've been experiencing either in the last 5 months or the month of May, which is like the fifth month. That all seems to be starting to taper off. So they talk about Christmas and New Year being a really significant time for you as well, not just from a financial perspective, but I feel like some of the choices that you're going to make leading into this phase that will help you. And again, they keep saying to me, there's a lot of burdens on you financially, and somehow they're also linking to connections, which could also be romantically linked or just kind of like connections when it comes to family and friends. And all this burden is going to start to be released because it's like the veil has been lifted in this space for you. When I say this space, I kind of look at finances, career, you know, things coming into our life more from an abundant perspective, like, you know, prosperity aspect. So it's not just that your career and finances will start to shift slightly, and there appears to be a lot more better in 2023 because you are going to have to cut a few things off and make some really strong choices so you stop living in that burden energy. And they keep saying, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like, sometimes we put ourselves in situations where it feels heavy and we know it's not right for us, but we, you know, feel bad, you know, to not like hurt someone else, or, you know, we feel like, oh, hang on a minute, it'll get better. I don't want to let anyone down. And they keep saying to me, like, you have to stop doing that because it means that your boundaries are not necessarily upheld all the time. And then unfortunately, from a human perspective, you seem to kind of feel it in that money finance aspect, but it will get better for you. It's just the next 3 months feels like I'm still kind of moving through a few things, like a bit of a roller coaster, and then coming into this happy period as you're moving into that Christmas, New Year. So by the time we get to like Easter, because there's these three, they talk about these three significant holiday moments, that's kind of where things start to like look up for you as well. And they also keep saying to me, like, about family, don't be afraid to kind of like speak to family or talk to family. So whatever family means to you, I feel like sometimes maybe you don't necessarily tell people what might be bothering you, so whether that's issues, problems, situations, and it feels like you need to kind of speak up a little bit. And they're also highlighting that, like, in that romance sector, so I kind of want to go into that space for a moment. And they keep showing me, like, this revolving door. So, and when they've done that in the past, it means, like, either yourself or someone else that might be currently around you keeps going, like, an in and out kind of thing. Like, you know, someone comes in, someone goes out, and it just feels like you want to jump off this merry-go-round. So that's kind of what it feels like to me. So does that make sense why they kind of show me that scenario?
Yes.
Yeah. And I keep feeling they're sitting more, like, a lot in my emotions. So when it comes to romance, and just tell me, is this past or present when they're saying to me that the emotions also feel like it's that revolving door, like I'm in and then I feel like I'm out. Where is that with you? Because that's kind of what keeps coming up.
It's just somebody that I'm interested in, but I highly doubt anything has come of it.
Okay. All right. So I won't ask you for their first name, but if you can just kind of hold their image in your face to me, and I'll just kind of like tap into kind of where it's at, just to kind of give you a little bit more clarity. But sometimes it's better to know what the actual situation is, so then you can kind of let it go for your own good. Does that make sense? So, okay. So just hold that person in your headspace for me, just for a moment. Okay, so the first thing that comes up, like, I can see why you're interested in them. They do have a really beautiful soul, right? And I'm saying that they have a beautiful soul because as spiritual people like yourself, we tend to look at the person's soul more so than the human actions that might be taking place. Because when I focus on this individual, there are certain things that they have either said or done in their own life that has caused you to kind of take a step back and go, oh, okay, so I'm kind of a bit lost here. So I feel like maybe they, not necessarily they have led you on, but you know when people kind of say things and when you like them, you go, oh, does that mean that they want something? Like, what's going on here? But it feels like this person has other people around them, and they keep talking about, like, other suitors. So that would mean that this individual either is talking to other people or it might also be thinking about getting into a relationship with someone else. I just feel like there's quite a number of people around this individual. And it could just be, like, friends, connections, but I feel like they actually use the word suitors, which meant that there were other people that were interested in this person. And so I feel like they don't necessarily want to settle down with anyone at the moment. I feel like they value you as a person. But to be honest with you, like, I feel like the romantic connection that you're looking for, I don't actually feel like this person could give that to you or is capable of meeting you even like halfway with what you're trying to bring into your life, what you're trying to manifest. Now, when I look at romance as an overall thing for you, what they do keep saying to me is, you know, it's very similar to like what they were talking about with your career and finance aspect. Like, you know, you have gone through a number of cycles where, you know, I feel like sometimes you get taken advantage of, to be honest. And that's no fault of anyone. It's just I feel like you can be a very giving person. And that, again, comes down to you having quite a lot of empathy and being quite intuitive. And this is kind of where they're saying that, like, you've had this ever since you were, like, really young. So I completely understand why it can be hard for an intuitive person to really hold boundaries when it comes to, like, connections and romance and friendships and so forth. But they keep saying to me, if you can hold true to what you really want out of a relationship, because they keep saying to me, sometimes you waver on what you know is right for you and what you think you want in the moment. And they're asking you just to kind of come back and really honoring yourself. You still have quite a number of, not lessons, but steps ahead of you when it comes to your spiritual development. And they're linking your spiritual development and your connection when it comes to romantic. And it does feel that moving forward, like the next 6 to 9 months is more about you and you meeting other people. And this is kind of where that spiritual development kicks in. And they keep saying to you, like, you have to put yourself out there and honor the spiritual part of you, because that will lead you closer to your person that you've actually been wanting for quite some time. And I don't know if you kind of manifest or you journal, but all of a sudden I saw this like list being written out, and normally that happens when someone is like manifesting something or has done some type of journal work or vision board or something like that. So that's kind of what they're bringing through, and they're saying to me like, everything that you want out of a person will come through for you, but you still need a good chunk of time, like I said, the next 6 to 9 months, to really honor you. And again, you're going through quite a number of changes over the next coming months, so it's probably not wise for you to get into anything serious. It's more about you starting to connect with like-minded people. I feel like you've connected with, you know, certain family members and friends and stuff like that out of necessity and also just out of circumstances, but they're asking you to kind of really come back within, because it's really important for you moving forward and what you're wanting to achieve. And sometimes we need to surrender and we need to sacrifice, you know, what social media or what the, you know, the traditional thing is within these particular areas in order to gain what it is that we truly need. And it feels like sometimes you have veered off your life purpose or off your path, and they're asking you to really jump back in it. And for you, your life purpose, and I keep seeing like children or younger people around you, because I see you standing up quite tall and kind of leaning over and offering support and listening and kind of helping people. So it does feel, and very humanitarian, and something about charity keeps coming up around you. So if you've ever wanted to kind of... that's what you do right now. So they keep saying like that is your life purpose, but it's about really kind of finding the cause that really matters to you, and then taking it to the next level, like starting to lead. Does that make sense? Like I feel like you've been in it, and now they're like saying you got to lead in the space that you feel most aligned to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm kind of getting burnt out on this job.
Yeah, and I think that's the job. You know what I mean? Like, you're in charity, you're of service, very humanitarian, but it's the type of work that you need to be moving into that will help you, because, like, you're on the ground at the moment. And so as a leader kind of has, you know, the people that then work on the ground. So because you've got so much wealth and knowledge, it's now more about you stepping in your power, you elevating. And one of the ways for you to do that is to very much move into that spiritual part of you, that's developing your intuition, so you can rise and you're not so bogged down or heavy by burden. And, you know, there's a role for those type of people, but I think that you've done it long enough that it's time now to elevate. And it's also the type of cause. I keep saying to me, like, choose a cause that means something to you. So maybe take a step back and really feel into, okay, so what cause do I want to focus on? Where do I want to be of service? Because I think you've done something for a long time and it's now about shifting it, but also moving into that leadership role. So you might even want to look at like your own mentoring, as in like finding someone that gets you or can help you move from where you currently are into the next level, but also just taking a bit of a break. So, yeah, I feel like that's what I was saying to you before. Your boundaries are sometimes wavering, so you've got to really hold strong, and you need to start to elevate. And one of the quickest ways to elevate is start to work on who you are as an individual within your own spiritual awareness and really expanding on that, and that will start to lead the way for you forward. Okay? Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Erin. So lovely chatting with you. Like I said, there's still some, like, you know, I know that there might be, you know, a couple months of still kind of like, you know, moving through all of this, because there's like, you know, opportunities and choices and decisions that need to be made. But honestly, like, you know, 2023 onwards for a good couple of years, it's really, really light-filled. It's happy. It's exciting. There's people coming into your life. There's you really elevating, really stepping into a strong leadership role. And it may not necessarily have to be you working for an employee, as an employee of like an organization. I feel like it might be you actually holding workshops or seminars and kind of really going out on a limb and going out on your own for a little while, and really kind of making an impact with the collective that way as well.
Interesting. Okay.
Awesome. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Erin. So lovely chatting with you.
All right, thank you.
Let us know how you go. Keep in touch, okay? Where are we going next? 303, you're next. You're live with Julie. What's your first name? Where are you calling in from?
Marilyn from Colorado.
Hi, Marilyn.
Hey, Marilyn. How you going?
Good.
I'm
doing good.
Good.
I would love, a message or some guidance and wisdom from a relative on the other side or someone who cares to share.
Is there anyone?
Thank you.
I'll see what comes through. Is there anyone in particular that you want me to kind of call in? It's like a phone call.
Someone who has some wisdom and willingness to talk about perhaps, you know, the next several months or the next, you know, evolution, just how they see things unfolding in good ways, I guess.
For you. Okay, no worries. Let's have a look, see who's coming through for you. You definitely have, like, a number of females that have crossed over on the side. I won't, like, there is, like, a male figure that kind of stands off to the side as well. But let me, like, the females seem to be the ones that are quite strong. I definitely feel like there's like a grandma type of figure. There's like an older woman, but she also brings through like a younger lady as well. So I definitely want to say grandmother, but I also want to say like either there's like an aunt or there's like someone who passed over before their time. She still brings through like this, what I would classify as like a younger lady. So do you know who these two people are?
Yes, probably my mother and her mother.
Ah, okay, beautiful. And your mum passed before her time? Because she keeps saying, like, this lady does come through, like, as a beautiful young lady.
Yeah, she wasn't young, but she, I think she felt like her life was cut short, so.
Yeah, and that's how this lady comes across. She's just like, I was taken way, way too young. But even your grandmother doesn't come across as, like, old either. And sometimes it happens, like, on the other side, you know, they tend to gravitate to an age that they felt most alive. And so both your grandmother and your mum feel more alive when they were a little bit more youthful. And that, again, they keep saying to me, like, your grandma also says to me, like, she has still had a long time left. Like, she felt she had time. Does that make sense? But her life was also, from her perspective, you know, cut short as well. And interestingly enough, when I focus on both of them, they keep saying to me, it's like they say, like, we died, or they passed over, and there was like a gap obviously between the two of them passing over, but they're also like highlighting like there's some similarities either in their passing, or certain things that may have transpired, that they talk about like having very similar kind of lives or situations happening to them. Does that make sense why they're bringing that through?
Yeah, their husbands left earlier than they did.
Okay. And I feel like one of them, and I know like sometimes when they pass over younger, they can say that it's quite tragic, but it feels like, I feel like I want to talk about your mum. Your mum keeps coming through as the most strongest one. It does feel like for her, she says like her passing felt a little bit like tragic, or it felt like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It felt unorthodox. Does that make sense? Because she's like, she's hot. She's like, I don't want to talk about it too much, but it just kind of like, I don't know. It just really took her and it changed her. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And she just wants you to know that she's definitely fine on the other side. She's very much at peace. You know, she's with her mom. She's also with other people. Like, you know, I feel like your mom, she looks like a friend. So I feel like maybe one of your mom's friends, who has passed over is with her. It could be someone like a friend that passed over when they were much older. So there must have been like a gap between the passing. But she does say like one of her friends is there. It sounds like, like, you know, I'm not the best with names, but it sounds like she's talking about a lady that whose name, like, for example, like if someone's name was Josephine, but they called her Josie, I kind of keep hearing something similar to that. That's what keeps coming through. Does that make sense? Why, she's got a friend that kind of has like a long name, but she shortens it?
Yeah, my other grandmother's name was Josephine.
Oh, bless her. Okay, cool. And so, that's so sweet. So this is your father's mum, so your mum's mother-in-law?
Correct.
Okay, cool.
And she did leave young. Yeah.
Ah, okay. So that all of these women left young. Because your mum's like going, oh, yeah, I've got a friend here and Josie's here and, you know, which is like short for Josephine. So I just want you to know that your mum is very, very much happy and at peace, and she has all these beautiful, strong women around her. And I feel like this is the key why you're saying, like, you know, what's coming up for you and who's coming through. And so these three particular women who absolutely adore you, not just from what they experienced here in the physical world, but obviously what they experience energetically, and what they've seen you accomplish as you have, you know, grown and aged throughout life. Interestingly enough as well, they keep talking about with you, and it feels like, you know, this is a lot with a lot of people when it comes to the collective, there's like there's heaviness and there's burden. And one of the things that your mum wants you to know is that even though there's certain milestones that are coming up for you, not necessarily, I feel like she's missed some, but like, you know, really, really significant ones when you were really young, I feel like she was around for. But she's talking about some bigger milestones as you age and as you continue to grow within yourself. Like, I feel like you might feel like she won't be there to experience X, Y, Z. And she just wants you to know that she will be with you. Like, she's always been with you. And she keeps saying, like, a butterfly. All of a sudden, I kept saying a butterfly. So that would mean that either there's, like, a butterfly totem around you at the moment. So I'd probably look into butterflies. Butterflies tend to mean, like, transformation. But there's something even magical about butterflies. And this one has some really beautiful, like, blues through it, like, different colors of blue and turquoise and stuff like that. So that's also an area that I'd probably look at for you. And for me, like, blue would represent, like, your throat chakra. So I'd say that, you know, there's certain things that maybe you still need to say, you still need to speak up, because your mum's saying, like, you have done a few things, you have spoken up recently, and she's, like, highlighting there's certain things that you should still make sure that you voice when it comes to, like, your opinion and your wants and your desires, because I feel like sometimes you're not completely heard even when you do speak. So your mum is just highlighting it might be a good idea for you to continue to speak, and if it means that you have to say the same thing in five different ways, then do it. Because she's been like, this is your life, right? And she says that, you know, learn from their, you know, like how their lives were cut short. Like, like I'm not saying that anything like that's going to happen to you, but like she's like saying you never know what's going to, you know, be around the corner, and you need to stop living your life like you're afraid of something or there's fear around you. She's like, just go do the things that you want to do. Don't hold back. And a lot of it comes from your voice. And sometimes it's not always about speaking your truth in front of someone. Sometimes it's just about you speaking your truth to yourself. And I think that's the key message here is, like, you know, they really want you to get honest with you and understand what it is that you want moving forward. And it's in a number of areas of your life. And even they talk about movement. So I don't know if you've been thinking about moving locations or just like uprooting from where you are. But there's something about movement for you. And it's really important that you get clear on what that means for you. Because they keep saying, like, it's time for you to move forward. You can't keep sitting. I don't want to say like sitting in the past, but I feel like sometimes maybe the past holds you back. Because I feel like it's more of the past of how you used to be and maybe some of the old cycles that have played your emotions. And so they keep saying this is super important for you to keep moving forward. Interestingly enough, your, like, career or, you know, hobbies. So for me, like, career can represent, like, you know, things that make you money, but also passions and hobbies and stuff like that that you can kind of move into. And it feels like for you there has been like some changes, but it was more like towards the start of the year. I feel like they keep talking about there were certain choices or decisions that you had to make at the beginning of the year when it came to, you know, certain passion projects or things to do with your career. And they keep saying to me, like, I feel like certain things haven't necessarily panned out for you or maybe how you expected them to be. And they keep saying to me, like, don't worry about it. There's going to be some more opportunities that come up for you. They're not far, they're around the corner type of thing. And for me, like, when they say it's around the corner, it could mean anywhere from like between a 3 to like, say, I'd say 3, 6, 9, like within the next like 9 months, there's some changes and some more decisions that will need to be made in order for you to move forward into the areas that you want to. And also they keep saying to me, like, read the fine print. So I'm not sure if you're looking at contracts at the moment or you're looking at, you know, negotiating things or that's going to be, like, coming up. I just feel like sometimes you miss, like, the fine print because sometimes we make decisions because we just go, oh, my God, I need to get out of this situation or I want that. And then we kind of don't look at all the T's and C's. And then, like, later on we get caught out with something going, oh, my God, I didn't realize that was part of it or this was that. So your mum says, like, sometimes you get let down because, you know, not everyone's going to be truthful to you. So she's saying, like, can you please read the fine print? And it's not just about contracts. I think she also means, like, just in general with, like, people and situations as well.
Mm, that's wonderful.
Does that make sense why all that comes through? Okay.
It has. It does make sense.
Yeah. Beautiful. And please know, like I said, you've got these beautiful women on the other side that are right behind you. And, you know, whenever you need to connect, especially with your mum, your mum's saying to me, like, just write, and there's a candle as well. So maybe, put a candle on when you're wanting to kind of connect with her a little bit more. If you're needing, like, extra guidance from her, you know, sit and journal and just, like, have a conversation with her, but try it, like, in a journaling style format if sometimes just sitting and having that conversation in your mind doesn't feel like you're getting anywhere.
Oh, thank you so much, Julie. That's really beautiful and helpful. Thank you.
I'm really glad. No problem. You have a wonderful afternoon.
Okay, you too.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Marilyn. Keep in touch and let us know how you go. Where are we off to next? 212 is next. 212. What's your first name? Where are you calling in from?
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is Karen in New York.
Hi, Karen.
Hey, Karen. How are you going?
Oh, I'm hanging in. Thank you. And you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. What can I do for you today, beautiful?
Yes. Well, I've been talking to you mostly about my teeth situation.
Oh, yes, I briefly remember, yes.
Yes. And, well, I had the first step done.
Beautiful. How are you feeling?
Well, I've been, you know, it was frustrating. I'm kind of okay now. Mm. It's just a little bit more, and the thing isn't ready. I feel like they've been jerking me around. First it was 1 week and maybe a little more than a week, and, oh, it's 2 weeks, always 2 weeks. Now we're going on 3 weeks, so I'm, like, very frustrated, and it's hard to get messages to these people, and they don't call you back, and so I don't know. I do like the care, but I'm not sure about the place. I'm very frustrated.
And look, at the end of the day, I think because it is such a delicate operation and procedure that you're having, and we always knew that you'd have one, and there'd be, like, a bit of a time gap, and there'd be another one. So I feel like for you, it is coming soon. I don't think, like, I understand it can get frustrating and they go, oh, we should get it done in a week or whatever. But I feel like just with the current state of the world, they did have good intentions to get it to you a lot more sooner than how it's actually played out. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. And I know it's frustrating because, you know, it's your teeth. And so it can be quite painful. Like, you know, just a simple toothache can be quite painful considering what you're going through. And interestingly enough, for you, again, they keep saying to me, just hang in there. It'll all be worth it. I know it can get frustrating to have it done. But, you know, the biggest thing is you actually got it done. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, you had a lot of fear around getting it done, and you held off on it for such a long time. And Spirit's just, like, saying, it's going to happen. It's not far off. You'll get the second, procedure done. And, you know, you can kind of then leave all of that behind and start to look forward. And yes, there's always healing that when it comes to, like, you know, procedures, especially, like, around the mouth, and it is quite delicate. And I feel like, because what keeps saying to me, like, with Spirit is, like, your first procedure went really well, but there was, like, I want to say, like, either complications or things that kind of popped up that maybe people weren't prepared for, or they, you know, it just kind of, like, happened. Just like, you know, when you have, like, a surgery and they go, oh, okay, I saw this, didn't see it before, we've got to fix that. While we're here, we might as well kind of, you know, look at that as well. And it just feels like Spirit is wanting your mouth, this situation, to heal before we go in with the second one, because I feel like the second one might appear to be a bit more invasive, or it might just kind of take a longer period of time. It just feels like the second one needs to be really, really delicate and done in a way that you go, right, this is amazing. I never have to sit in that chair again. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's not about that. I know I have about, you know, 3 months or so before I get, you know, approached that. This is just the intermediate healing and getting the temporary prosthetic.
Yeah, but so, the temporary prosthetic
I've been in shock. I actually did it, and...
You're proud of yourself.
I look in the mirror, and oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, the
thing is, you know,
mm.
I hope so. It's hard for me to I feel like I lost a leg or something, that kind, a limb, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a very weird feeling, so I'm trying to bring my vibration up and not focus on it, and okay, I had to do this, I have to move forward.
Yeah.
So,
And look, you know, if you're feeling like, you know, like a part of you is missing, I mean, that's also like symbolic for you to know that something better is coming for you, something that will no longer be like painful, it won't be like a burden. And I feel like sometimes when we do go through a transformation, when we do let something go, it does feel very foreign to us, like we want it back straight away. And this is why I feel like the universe is just kind of elongated the interim prosthetic. Because so you can kind of see it, you know what I mean? So you can actually be like, wow, I did this. So I feel like they really want you to be proud of what you did. And like I pulled out some cards for you, and the three cards that came up was, like the first one was like desire. And it's like a genie bottle that sits in this card picture. And so again, it's like saying, this is all for the desire that you had, for the wish that you had, in order for, you know, that aspect of your life to be healed finally, and to no longer have those issues. And then the second card was like soothe, and it's got a teacup with like a slippery elm. So, you know, to me, slippery elm is all about healing the body, and not just like the internal, but also the external. So kind of like maybe take a step back and just sit in that reflective moment and go, right, at the moment, I know this looks a bit weird, or I can't believe I did it, and I feel like, you know, I've lost something. But you have to understand that you are going through a healing process, because that's the third card that came up, was healing. Mm-hmm. And there's like a candle that's burning in this as well. And so it's asking you, you know, healing isn't just about the physicality. So your body is healing from the procedure. You'll put the prosthetics in. And that, again, that needs to be right for you. So you don't have any issues with it, because the next procedure is in a couple of months' time. So this is why I feel like they were saying it's super important that this part of it is equally done correctly without there being issues, because you are healing. You are healing the loss of loved ones that have left your life. You are healing the loss of just almost like feeling like you having to be there for everyone else. It's like you need to heal that part of you as well, because it was such a massive part of your life, like being there for other people. And it can be really daunting and overwhelming when we finally start to look after ourselves. That's very foreign to us. And so you were going through that process. And so I think it's super important that you acknowledge what an amazing person you are and where you've been, but also this and the courage that you have had, because I've followed your journey over the last couple, since I started doing this show, from where you, when I first spoke to you, to where you are now, to actually have done that procedure. And I know it feels a bit foreign, but you know, you need to have that tap on the back and know that that's an amazing achievement for you, honestly. And that means that there's more healing to come for you, and everyone on the other side is, you know, clapping in, not just in awe, but they're just like saying, like, finally, oh my God, Karen, thank God, you're looking after yourself, you're moving forward, and you won't know yourself once all this is done and you come out of it on the other side. Honestly, you are just going to be so proud of yourself. At the moment, you don't feel it because you're going through healing, there's been some pain, there's been some frustrations, all that type of stuff. But honestly, mm-hmm. like, you are going to have almost like this sense of like fierceness in you going, wow, if I could do that, God knows what else I can do. It just sets the tone. And I think because you have been there for everybody else, you know, Spirit saying to me, we had to do something so dramatic for you to understand how strong you actually are. So that way, all the little things that other people would go like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. That's amazing. You'd be like going, what do you mean? Like, did you see what I did not long ago with my teeth? Like, this is nothing. You know, this is easy for me. It's kind of like allowing you to kind of really step into your own power, finally, yeah, for you. Mm.
Oh,
does
wow,
that
make that's sense? Interesting. Yeah,
there's
in a way.
There's beautiful things coming for you. Yeah, and look, there is. There's beautiful things coming for you. But I think for you right now, it's all about your healing. And it's really important that you move away from just that human stuff that we kind of sit in, like, you know, that heaviness of like, oh, what did I do? Or, oh, it's just like, you know, why is it taking so long? And kind of really raise your vibration just by allowing yourself to heal, by understanding that the reason you've done this is to get to your desired goal and to allow yourself the soothingness for you. And again, you know, even though that showed me like a teacup and it had slippery elm in there, so it's all about, like, allow this time for you to heal. You know, don't try and rush it from a human perspective to get to the place that you thought you would be at right now, because sometimes it's our emotional stuff that needs to be healed, yeah? So everything that has happened to you over the last couple of years that made you not do this operation, because it wasn't just about your fear, there were other things that were going on in your life, that's what Spirit is like saying, we need you to look at that and we need you to heal.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a work in progress.
But you're going to be fine. Yeah.
Can I ask you, do you see any ramifications of taking the antibiotics? I did work on having the right dude for timeline, and the dentist prescribed me an antifungal to be sure, which I started taking, and then a few days in, I knocked over the bottle because it was a liquid, and I couldn't get to him to get it refilled. Meanwhile, this past Monday, I happened to have had a prior scheduled, you know, tele visit with my primary care doctor, and I told her the whole thing. So she prescribed this medication for me. Do you see that as a good thing, or is?
Yeah, I don't see any
where I'm
of the
at
medication
with.
That. Yeah, and look, I don't see any of the medication that you've been prescribed that wouldn't help you or would hinder you in any way, shape, or form. I mean, I do prefer the antifungal, like drops and stuff for you. But Spirit's like saying the antibiotics is equally just as good. But you know, you will go in to see the other doctor that that liquid stuff for you. So I feel like, you know, they will kind of come back to you and there'll be other things that you can take. But also they keep saying, like, take your natural stuff as well. I think that really does help you and it helps, like, your psyche. But this antibiotics that you're on or that the doctor prescribed in the meantime doesn't seem to be affecting your body in a negative way. Your body's actually wanting a lot, as much as, like, I know you're spiritual, but sometimes the body just says, we get that, but I also want this because this is what the human side of the body is needing in order to heal, and the spiritual aspect of healing is also working in conjunction, and that's why they kept saying to you before, this is a chance for you to heal, working on the emotional, so allow some of, I guess, Western medicine to pick up the slack for what the body is going through, because sometimes you've gone through a lot, don't forget, and your body's pretty strong considering what you've been through, but it also needs a little bit of help, and it's actually saying to you, it's okay, take the help, I need it.
Mm. So this antifungal is a good thing for me and it's helping my body.
Yes, it's definitely helping your body. Yes, because there's lots of, like, you know, the stress that you've gone under, like you do have a bit of inflammation in the body and also in the gut area. You know, all of this is definitely helping you. And that's where the antifungal comes into play. And sometimes, you know, we have, as humans, like, we're always exposed to certain things and we have, like, underlining antifungal, fungal-y stuff because, you know, we're exposed to it. But sometimes it doesn't get out of control and we manage it, and sometimes we're not even aware that we have it. But, you know, I think for you, because of what you're going through, and it is the teeth area, it's super important that we make sure that your body is getting what it actually wants. And in this instance, I'm reading your body, and your body is like saying, yes, please tell her I need to take, like, the things that are prescribed to me. And also it does want your holistic stuff, because it feels like it's the holistic stuff that you will continue on with when all of this stuff is done. And it really thrives on the holistic side of things. But it is saying that it just needs that little bit of extra that the Western medicine is providing for you.
Okay. Well, I thought I would go back to the herbal anti, you know, whatever, when I was done with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that you will. It's just like in that interim, like if this is what you need, don't be afraid to take it.
Okay. Can I ask, is the spirit see that 100 milligrams is the right dose or 200? Because the doctor originally told me 100, but then when it came back from the pharmacy and all, it says 200, so I don't know, you know, maybe it was changed, but I need the 200 or they made a mistake.
I keep getting told, like, the 100, but just double-check with the doctor, because I keep getting shown, like, it being having to be spread across, like, multiple, like, you know, when you take it. Like, so it feels like it might, like, you know, like I said, double-check, because I'm not a doctor, but I keep seeing, like, the 100 mil being, like, the key dosage, but I double-check to see whether or not it's, like, 100 twice, like, you know, twice a day, things like that. But that's the number I keep seeing, but they keep saying it's like dispensed across, you know, more than one application. So it might be 100 mils divided by two or 100 mils like twice a day. So I would just honestly, like, I just contact your doctor, because sometimes pharmacists can't read doctors' handwritings and, you know, all that type of stuff. But the 100 mil sticks in my head quite significantly.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, I put an email into her.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
No worries,
wonderful.
Karen. And again,
always
keep us updated. Oh, thank you, beautiful. And yeah, keep us updated on your journey, because, like, I just see beautiful things for you. And I'm so proud. I'm so proud that you did this.
Thank you. Thank you for the
welcome.
And definitely get a hold of the doctor, because no one can read doctor's handwriting, not even doctors.
Yes.
Anyway. So careful checking on that one.
Thank you.
Let us know how it goes. holy moly, time's just racing along. Now, a note to everyone on the lines. When this show ends, we're not hanging up or closing the switchboard. We carry on through. Open Lines with Meredith is happening at the top of the hour. So if you haven't gotten on yet, and even if you have, stay on the board, because Open Lines continues for a whole other hour. It's been a long day here, and that will be our last hour. It's time for my nap. All right, now let's go to area code 67. You're on with Julie. What's your first name? Where are you coming from?
Hi, thank you. This is Jessica from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jessica, how are you going?
Hey, good. Nice readings that you're doing. A lot of information comes through for you.
Thank you.
I am in I'm like in a situation that I'm looking for a new place to live, as well as like a new job. Both of them are feel very temporary. Like I'll just leave it like vague like that. And I'm in a new state. I've been here for like 8 months, and I through this whole experience of like seeking a new place to live, I've met a lot of people like in these charity organizations that have been helping me. So like, I guess they're becoming my community. So really I'm at a place that like, I'm just putting it out to them like, hey, I still need a place to live. And hey, I'm looking for a new job. Because the efforts that I try to make, even though I am applying for for jobs and places, it just feels like I'm in a very interesting and new sort of experience of like just putting it out to the community and then like just trusting something will shift. So I just wanted to know if you could speak on that, because again, it's like all new way of being for me.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And they keep saying, like, I feel like a lot of the shift started for you back in March or the early part of this year. Does that make sense for you?
Well, I did go through initial shifts because I moved out here in December, and then my lease was up it was a short-term lease. Mm-hmm. My lease was up in May. So then I went through another shift, and I've been going through it again for the last.
Okay, so maybe it's a number three. Because I kept saying, like, the early part of last year, I mean, this year, and the number three, like the month March, always being significant. So it does, obviously, it's every couple of months something's happening for you. Okay, let's have a look at what's going on then. Sometimes when we have cycles, it's fine. It's, like it's all about our cycles, like, ending. So it doesn't surprise me that you are going through a particular cycle that has repeated itself like a number of times now. So let's have a look at the move and this career thing. Now, before I go into that, like I know you said you're meeting like beautiful people and a new community and they are like, you know, it's wonderful, but it also feels like there's a whole other new community or other new people that you're going to meet. And so these ones are here for you. It's funny, like they keep saying, they're not necessarily here for you. They're actually here for you to keep you sane, to keep you grounded, to keep you trusting in the process, more so than them being the ones who would say, for example, find that job for you or help you find that home. I'm not saying that they can't offer certain things, but I don't think that's actually what will transpire, but they're there just to kind of keep you grounded and to keep you going. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, they're not, I'll just say yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when I do focus on the move for you, again, like it's very intertwined with your career, and they keep saying to me it's more of the career feels like that's the key thing that we're missing here. Like, I know you're looking at moving, and I know that, and I know it can get really frustrating when you want to move or you need to move and you've got to find something. But they're saying to me, like, we've got to focus more on, like, the job, the career for you, as opposed to the movement, because the movement will follow at warp speed when the career is kind of really, what's the word I want? It's not even about, like, you starting a new job. It's about the career being really anchored within what it is that you're, like what you want. So interesting enough, they keep saying to me, even when you are applying for roles and stuff like that, I feel like I'm tapping into a breadth of roles or tasks, or it feels like you're quite a versed person when it comes to like jobs or tasks or responsibilities and skill sets. So does that make sense why they keep saying to me, like, I feel like you're quite talented. So it means like you can do quite a number of different things, and it feels like I'm applying for a number of jobs in a number of different areas. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Why that comes up?
Yeah, and that's okay. Why it also gets sort of frustrating, because it's like, oh, I have all these gifts, yet no one, I haven't really found that position yet. I mean, I want to do my own business, consulting. Like, these old dreams came back into my mind, and I'm just trying to, like, weave my way into having something that's stable, working for somebody else, as well as doing my consulting.
Yeah, and this is why I think it's super important that we, and why Spirit is like saying, you need to get really clear on what it is that you want to do. So the I understand that it's good to obviously have, a job that kind of pays, like, you know, the bills and stuff like that, and then you have some extra time to focus on your passions. And I feel like with you, the consulting thing will eventually take off where you don't have to have, like, that other job or that second job. But I feel like with now, they keep saying to me, kind of move away from wanting to kind of, or only applying for roles that might be offering what we would perceive as stability. So, you know, when people say like, oh, this is like full time, this is permanent part time, or whatever the case may be, I feel like you need to kind of look at even roles that may initially say like, oh, well, this is a contract position, or it's for like the next 6 months or something like that, out of fear going, oh, well, I can't go for that one because, you know, I've got to make sure, I don't want to keep moving all the time. But I feel like for you, if you can just narrow down the role that you want, as in, okay, I know you've got a lot of skills, a lot of talent, but you got to find the role that's going to A, pay your bills, and B, open that at my position, but it actually has quite long, a lot of longevity, and the longevity that you need. Because don't forget, you don't actually need as much time as you think you need in order to build up your own consultative business and let that be your main breadwinner. So this is where I feel like they're saying you're a little bit confused when it comes to like exactly what the career looks like. So I'd probably, you know, take today or tonight or the next couple of days, and like, you know, there is a full moon and all that type of stuff, so use it to your advantage. I would carve out what the next 12-month and 24-month looks like for you, and really put in there where do you want your business to go, not where you think humanly, like, oh, well, maybe it's going to take me 5 years. No, where do you want it to be, right, with your intention and your passion and your drive. And don't worry about, you know, the external factors when people say, like, oh, it takes forever to build up your own business. We're living in a different type of energy at the moment. So there's a lot of things that we can push and change with what is currently around us. So I feel like for you, and they keep talking about, like, customer service. So I would probably recommend you looking for a role that either has, like, a customer service type of element to it, where it's a bit more easier. Like, you can jump in that role, it doesn't stress you, you can leave it when you leave work, but it gives you, brings in money, right? And it feels like that type of role can heavily play to a lot of your skill sets without tiring you. And then you focus on your own freelance contracting stuff with you being a consultant and really honoring yourself in moving forward.
On that note, I'm diving in between breaths. We're already past the top of the hour, and we've got another live show right behind you. We'll have to leave the reading there. Rebecca, call in next time. Julie, what do you have for us for your wrap-up?
Oh, for wrap-up, yes. So if anyone does want to have a personal reading with me or a healing, I do it online and in person. Just head over to the link in my bio on Instagram, which is at modern.day.medium, and everything else I'm doing is also in there. And that's it. So let's allow the other show to carry on through.
Woo! Awesome. Thanks, Julie. We'll talk again soon. Great, as always,
love
to
it.
Connect with you on the air.
Thank you. All right.
All right. And everyone else, stay on those lines. We're continuing open lines and readings and healings. Meredith from The Call Within is next, right after this quick little interlude, right after this.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
From the heart of Vancouver, what a great place to bring News for the Soul.
I know, isn't it perfect? Remember that movie Dead Zone, Christopher Walken?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like that for real.
I think reasonably accurate, too, honey.
Oh, that's an understatement, honey.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our hearts and open up our souls and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
Well, Daniel just mentioned the heart attack. That is how he died, isn't it?
Yes.
Wow.
He had two heart attacks, right up one right after the other.
Yeah, that's what I
said.
Wow. No, I had him. I have him.
You know, the whole thing about the spirituality and the wealth or sustainability not going together, I just think is the biggest load of crap, you know? I mean, what have you got...
Like it is, girl.
Well, really, what have you got to give anyone if you've got nothing?
Buckle your seatbelt, Dorothy, because Candace is going bye-bye.
Yes, I had this really bizarre experience where I got sucked through a wall, like a solid wall.
During the time that I was knocked unconscious, an angel came to me.
People's solidity began to morph with the geometries, so you'd see little bits of their, like their hand began to go missing.
And this particular angel, as I recount in the book, said to me that I had chosen the wrong path in life, that I was to choose a new path, and it was to be a path of peace, I was to teach peace.
Lots of amazing things coming up.
News for the Soul phone lines are now open. Call in now for a free intuitive reading on the air. Dial 646-595-4274. That's 646-595-4274.
Yeah.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
And as promised, we're continuing right through, and open lines is continuing, God willing. Right now, Meredith should be with us on the board, hopefully, also God willing. And it's the time for the call within. Let's find out. Let's try this line here. Meredith, do we have you on the board?
Yes, I'm here. I made it.
Yay! That helps a lot. Okay, good.
Yes.
Let's get you to reintroduce yourself, your show, and what's up for today.
Sure. So this is Meredith McDonough with The Call Within. I help people make peace with their past so they can look forward to their present. I run a full-service intuitive coaching business out of Southern California, completely on the internet remote. And I bring in tools such as hypnosis, file field tuning, past life regression, inner child regression, as well as with Reiki and quantum touch intuitive energy work are all parts of my practice. And the newest element to the practice has been coaching. I'm super excited to be here. I know that there was a little bit of a time mix up last time, and I kind of figured, you know what, maybe it just wasn't time that day. Sometimes it happens. You know, it happens. So you just shift when the universe wants to do something different, you do something different.
It was a super weird intervention of divine intervention. That happens a lot here, not going to lie. It's always good.
Yes, I always think there's always a reason for it. Even if it doesn't make sense at the time, it's like, oh, it'll make sense later. I'm so grateful to be here. And I briefly wanted to chat about, before we open the line for readings, was kind of like to talk about like the true purpose of intuitive readings. I think there's so much out there. There's so many different kinds of readings, and there's so many amazing readers out there. And one of the things I thought about from the last show is I know people call oftentimes and want to know, like, will I ever meet somebody? And this includes my own clients too. I have clients who know, will I ever meet someone? You know, will my dream job ever start? Will I ever start a business? Will I go on a trip? Will I go on that vacation of my dreams? And I oftentimes, as I've now been introducing the coaching element to the intuitive side of my business, is, readings are meant to, sometimes they're meant to help people heal the past. There is a level of acknowledgement, right? There's something really healing about having somebody sit in front of you who's never met you before, and they start, you know, telling you things about yourself. You're like, whoa, there's no way anybody else would know that. I haven't told a soul. And there's a powerful element of being seen and being heard, okay? And I think the second most important part of a reading is to empower clients to follow their own intuition. I'd say, like, 50% of the readings I give are people who are really, like, I really need some guidance. I really need some direction. I'm really feeling, like, hopeless. But the other 50% are people who are like, you know, I know what I want to do. I have this feeling. This is the place I should go. You know, the person, the place, the thing, the party. I think I should go that way. And they just need that extra reassurance and validation that, you know, they're not, I don't want to say they're not crazy, because they oftentimes say, am I crazy? But I think I'm supposed to go talk to that person or leave this job. But this doesn't logically make sense. So I think the purpose behind intuitive readings, too, is to validate our non-logical side, and sort of to